with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Well, here it is, the last Friday in August. School is in session here in the hills and hollers of West Virginia. We're trying to get the little Kincaid tribe back into the swing of things, back in sync, as it were. And, well, you know, I was gone from the microphone last night. I don't know how many of you already know this. It may have already gone out over the Coconut Telegraph, for all I know. No, I was gone from the microphone last night because it was Ferg's first big scrimmage. It was the I don't know if other states do this, but like the all the schools in the county, or for the most part, in the middle school arena, bring their squads together for one big inter-county scrimmage or some such. And they sort of have a round of scrimmaging, one school against another, and then another school, and then another, and you get the idea. And so our little school scrimmaged first against arch-rival Fayetteville, and then scrimmaged against Beckley Stratton Middle School from over in Raleigh County. That's how it was cruising along. Ferg was doing a good job. Saw him get several. He was in on several gang tackles and had a couple of solos that were real pretty. Shot video of it to show his mama, of course, and relatives and so forth. And then it happened. He was involved in a gang tackle, and somebody came and just whammied the. Just really popped a lick on a couple of guys. And I'm sitting here next to Horn intern junior grade Ferg with a busted wing. A very frustrated Horn intern junior grade Ferg with what we have had initially diagnosed as a fracture in his elbow. And his arm all splinted up. And he is a most miserable fellow. So that has taken up most of last night and the best part of today. And he is intensely angry and frustrated and afraid that his season is over. But it's part of the game, you know. It just is. And we've had talks about that, but it's kind of hard to explain that to a jacked-up 13-year-old who was really anxious to go around and out and start knocking heads. But it is the last Friday in August. Summer will soon be done. I guess with the start of the school year, you can pretty much argue that summer's over. Still some warm weather left. A little bit rainy today, but nice outside just the same. And with this being the last Friday in August, well, it's Friday. That means it's Friday on the front porch. That means it's up to you what happens in the program. Come on, but it's up to you every night. If there is a radio show on planet Earth that is caller focused and listener driven, I don't know what would be more so than this program. But Fridays we do kind of lighten up a little bit. You might recall last Friday we talked a little football. And I have a sneaking suspicion, with the time of year being what it is, we will talk a little more and more and more. So there you go. I mean, that's sort of where this Friday is headed. It's a grab bag. It's a mixed bag. It is a show with an uncertain, uncharted path. We're just going to go off on a little wander, if that's okay by you. And, of course, you know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or, on your own nickel, 304-658-3333. August is ending, and it has been a financially brutal August. For those of you who haven't, or haven't lately, if you could be so kind as to hit the PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com, it would be really, really good to end on an up note for a variety of obviously, the Pittsburgh thing was expensive, and you all helped out immensely. But, you know, the month-to-month bills, they don't take breaks because we're out there trying to build exposure for the Horn, which we did do. And which has resulted in some really, really good conversations and some good awareness building. But we do continue to have the regular monthly needs, and we are needing, believe me. So as August comes to an end, and of course we will have there are a couple more shows left in August, mind you, but let's try to please make this end on an up note before September begins, and then, you know, zero out and start all over again. There's that. And something else, just a sort of a little reminder for you. If you have been a long-time listener to this program, you know that we live about 8 miles ahead of the curve. We truly do. And I just wanted to give you an example of it because it's an example that comes from someone whom I highly respect and whose opinion I know matters a great deal to most of you. And I would have talked about this on Wednesday evening, except for the fact that we devoted Wednesday evening to the passing of Senator Kennedy. And I didn't want to interject this then. But over at Crooks and Liars, posted on Wednesday by Logan Murphy, Wednesday, August 26th, 2009 at 2 p.m., according to the post, was an article that I found very, very interesting, and it comes from Tom Hartman. And Tom's a great guy and a smart guy, a really, really scary smart guy. And the title of the post over at Crooks and Liars is "Tom Hartman, Lower the Retirement Age from 65 to 55. And I saw that on Wednesday, and I said, well, I'll be diggity. Because and granted, okay, I'm going to tell you, there's a caveat in front of this. One of the things that I've got to get better at, or we've got to find some way of dealing with, or some way of notating something, is to generally put some topics in the description of each archive over at whiterosesociety.org so we can go back and find these things, because as it was described to me by our good friend David in Tennessee, me or you or anyone trying to go back and find a specific mention of a specific issue inside the White Rose Society archives of Head On with Bob Kincaid is not like looking for a needle in a haystack, because you can find a needle in a haystack in about 15 minutes if you've got a metal detector. What we are talking about here is looking for a needle in a stack of needles, which is significantly more difficult. But if you go back a year, maybe 2 years, I'm not sure what, you'll find somewhere back there a program in which we engaged in a rather extended discussion of the concept of, yes, we should lower the retirement age for Social Security to something meaningful, 55, 50 years old, so that people can go out and experience the full panoply of their human potential without having to burn it all up over the course of, no offense, but when you finally retire at 65 and then your golden years start, that's not fair. You need to have that chance away from wage slavery at least 10 years before 65. So I saw that on Wednesday and I thought, well, I'll be doggone. Three cheers and a tiger for me. I was ahead of the curve again. And I'm really, really pleased to see that kind of validation coming from Tom Hartman. Because I'm sure he actually did some research and advanced thinking about it, because I think Tom has probably, and I mean this as a compliment, has an advanced degree in advanced thinking. That's why he's so good at what he does. So that's something to think about. Would this country come to a screeching halt if we suddenly afforded retirement-level dignity to people who are under 65, under 60 perhaps? So that with a Social Security check coming in, people could go and do volunteer work or some level of give back to the community work, or go back to school and study for something new to spend the rest of your life doing? See, I think that's valuable. I think that's real valuable to society. Plus, it essentially eliminates the unemployment problem, because if you're retiring people at 60, at 55, then everybody coming out of high school and everybody coming out of college is pretty much guaranteed a job, aren't they? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. So, just something to think about. And kudos to Tom Hartman for that bit of, honest-to-God liberal thinking. Because we've got to start thinking that way, and we've got to start operating that way. Because that's what it means to be liberal, to look forward into the future and not necessarily operating according to the old paradigms. Because that's the only way that you have positive change going into the future. So, yeah, pause, you can drive the truck through. I'm sorry. I'm trying to do 2 or 3 or 4 or 5, 6, 7, 12 different things at one time. I don't know if you caught this on Rachel Maddow. I hadn't talked about it yet simply because I was away from the microphone last night and Wednesday was what Wednesday was. But there's a new AstroTurf fraud being exposed in the coal industry. Of course, AstroTurf frauds are what the coal industry does best. We've got that going for us. We do have some nastiness, real ugly nastiness, why isn't someone with a skinny black tie and a very plain, boring black suit and absolutely no sense of humor why isn't someone having a conversation with Idaho gubernatorial Republican candidate Rex Rammel? Hi, I'm Rex Rammel. Wow, what a name, Rex Rammel. He's a veterinarian, Rex Rammel is. Come here, Rex. Here, Rex. Come here. Rex! Yeah, Rex Rammel, veterinarian. It sounds like a television program. Rex Rammel, television veterinarian. Next on Rex Rammel, animal doctor. I wish he was half as funny as his name is. Yeah, Rex Rammel, Animal Whisperer. Oh, please. Rex Rammel, Animal Whisperer, made a real funny joke. Or at least it's funny in the minds of twisted right-wing eliminationist monsters. This goes back to Tuesday. He said he wants to hunt. Yeah, really. He wants to hunt President Obama. Nah, kidding. No kidding. And he did this as part of a criticism of the incumbent governor of Idaho, a right-wing repig-licking by the name of Otter. No, not the really cool guy named Otter from Animal House. And yeah, isn't this funny? You've got a veterinarian running against an otter. You can't beat repig-licking politics for this kind of stuff. But in the course of criticizing Governor Otter, there was a children's program we used to watch when you guys were, yeah, PB&J Otter with Mayor Jeff. And yeah.
I loved that show.
I know.
It taught me moral values.
Yes, it did. PB&J Otter and Governor Otter, because, you know, there was Mayor Jeff Otter in that program. But anyway, I'm rambling. Rex Rammel, veterinarian, gubernatorial candidate, Rex Rammel, is highly upset at Governor Otter because Governor Otter did not buy the first tag, an $11.50 wolf tag, in the state's brand spanking new wolf killing program. I don't know if there's going to be helicopters involved and four legs of dead wolves sawed off like Sarah Palin's fond of doing up in the wilds of wild Alaska. But out in Idaho, they're going to kill them some wolves. And I'm sure our friend Allison in Idaho is probably about ready to get on it, just crawl under the table and stay till she gets to get the heck out of there. Just trying to make it one more day, God, one more day. Yeah, don't wear the wolfskin coats in Iowa for a while, okay? Because they got a blood frenzy going on up amongst the right wing pig licking blood monkeys. So Rex Rammel is all upset at Governor Otter. I can't say that. How am I supposed to be taken seriously? Rex Rammel is all upset at Governor Otter because Governor Otter didn't buy the first wolf tag when they became available. You know, standing in line for wolf tags like it's the Idaho equivalent of waiting to get tickets to the premiere of the new Star Wars movies. I don't know. But Rex Rammel's upset about it, and he was trying to make some sort of political points out of it by pointing out that Governor Otter didn't have the first wolf tag for Idaho's planned wolf hunt. So in making these remarks and trying to get a needle in on veterinarians getting a needle in, that's kind of scary too, isn't it? This is just a losing story across the board, isn't it? He criticized Governor Otter. And then said to an audience member, after mentioning the wolf tag, an audience member hollers out, "Obama tags!" And Rex Rammel, Wild West veterinarian, replies, "The Obama tags? We'd buy some of those." And later, he tweets this morning, "Obama hunting tags was just a joke. Everyone knows Idaho has no jurisdiction to issue tags in Washington, D.C. Thereby giving tacit, explicit, one or the other, you pick, endorsement to the idea of people using guns to eliminate the President of the United States in the nation's capital. Welcome to Republican politics. Although, to be fair, Idaho Senator Mike Crapo issued the following statement. Rex Rammel's comments are in very poor taste and should not have been said. Remarks like these should not even be made jokingly. We are engaged in a critical national debate over many major issues facing our country today. Remarks like these are not only unhelpful in that debate, but they undermine it. He should apologize for those remarks and for the perception they may have created. Now, we're gonna look at that language here in just a minute. Representative Mike Simpson is a Republican from Idaho. He said, "It is absolutely irresponsible to say such inflammatory things, especially for someone who seeks to be a leader in Idaho." The Idaho Republican Party came out and said, "The Idaho Republican Party does not condone Rex Rammel's comments, whether in jest or not." Still no apology from Rex Rammel, Wild West veterinarian. And for those of you paying attention, there won't be one. Republicans don't apologize. Are we clear on that? Republicans don't apologize. That's what Democrats do. Liberals do. Progressives do. Decent people with morals and consciences, when they say something stupid like this, they apologize. But Rex Rammel is a sociopath. Rex Rammel is a conservative Republican. And there will be no apology forthcoming. Now, Senator Mike Crapo, hold your horses. Again with the horse analogies. Animal analogies. Otters. Otters and horses and wolves. Oh my. Yeah, hang on a minute. So, going back to Senator Crapo's statement, he said, Bob said, analyzing, "Rex Rammel's comments are in very poor taste and should not have been said." Okay. Why should they not have been said? They should not have been said, according to Senator Crapo, because remarks like these should not even be made jokingly. Okay, okay, but Senator Crapo, why should they not even be made jokingly? Well, that's because we are engaged in a critical national debate over many major issues facing our country today. This is true. That doesn't explain why you don't make the remarks. Remarks like these are not only unhelpful in that debate, but they undermine it. Bingo! This is a variation on what Woodward and Bernstein identified nearly four decades ago as a classic Republican non-apology, non-apology, or what they termed a non-denial denial. Namely, remarks like these are not only unhelpful in that debate, but they undermine it. What Mike Crapo is saying is, please stop showing the people of the United States that the Republican Party is made up of a bunch of violent, sexist, genderist, racist, bigoted, homophobic rumps. Please quit showing America that the Republican Party is a rump party. Please stop that. We're trying to act like we're actually a national party when we all know that we're not. That's what that means. It's not, don't go out there saying you'd like to see the president blown away, because that's a really evil, nasty, vile, hateful, filthy thing to say. Don't go out there saying you'd like to see the president blown away, because you'll put off the normal people that we're trying to defraud into giving us power again so that we can continue to rape the country. That's what that means. Even that statement in Crapo's statement, remarks like these should not even be made jokingly. has the ring of eliminationism to it. Who says it was a joke? These are lily-white Idaho folk. And it wouldn't bother them one iota to see that one taken out. Because they are that racist. You know, then Joe Biden would be president, and well, you know, we hate Joe Biden, but at least you think they don't think like this? You think they don't talk like this? Baby, I grew up, and I live below the Mason-Dixon line. Trust me when I tell you, they do. We hate that Joe Biden, but at least he's white. Wish I was kidding. I'm not. Our pal Cindy notes, animal lovers are the only people Rex Rammel could possibly hope to have for customers, don't you think? Yeah, being as him, what with him being Rex Rammel Wild West veterinarian. Animal lovers do not kill animals. Animal lovers would not willingly do business with an animal killer. Can you imagine trusting an animal killer with the life of your beloved pet? Cindy says, ask Guy James. I'm sure he would agree with me. I don't believe Rex even has a veterinary license. Nobody in that field would license a killer. He must be masquerading as a vet. No, he's a real veterinarian. But you got to remember, there's a whole lots of different kinds of veterinarians. There's your family practice veterinarian who takes care of a lot of puppies and a lot of kitties and puts down the occasional elderly dog and cat and deals with whatnot and whatever in amongst. And then there are like the industrial veterinarians that take, you know, you think the CAFOs, the Cauchwitzes in Nebraska and elsewhere where cattle stand up to their knee, do cattle have knees? I don't know. What would pass for knees in a human stand in their own excrement while eating, hormone and antibiotic laden feed and constantly injected with this, that, and the other thing because the feed itself is making them sick because we're cramming the feed down their throat because we have to make them bigger and fattier faster so that they can be taken off to the slaughterhouse and killed and shipped around where people can look in the meat case at the local Safeway, Albertsons, the Fausto's, Kroger's, what have you, and say, look, that's a pretty piece of steak there, Marveline. And be quietly never reminded that meat comes from cows and not from the meat case. Those operations have veterinarians. Sure. Just like there are physicians and psychologists and psychiatrists who are associated with the concentration camp at Guantanamo Bay. All of the physicians, at least, all of whom took a Hippocratic oath that begins, first do no harm. You know, we've got the stories of the physician who came and checked out the guy hanging by his thumbs in the hangar at Bagram Air Force Base. I think the guy later died, wasn't that the case? And they lowered him from his chains long enough for the doc to come and, you know, just sort of poke around on him. Hey, looks good. String him back up and torture him some more, boys. Yeah, that guy once took an oath that begins, first, do no harm. And the same thing applies, sadly, to veterinarians. Of which Rex Rammel, Wild West Animal Doctor, appears to be one. Yeah, I'm being reminded by Lottie in the chat room. Yeah, Bob, that was the guy. They broke his legs. String him back up. Beat him some more. Get out the drill and the cattle prod. He can take it. Yeah. Eliminationism. Eliminationism. This having been sent along by Corey. Rex Rammel, independent, age 47, hometown Rexburg, occupation veterinarian and former elk rancher. Family, wife Linda, four children, education, doctorate in veterinary medicine from Kansas State University, master's degree in animal science from Utah State University, bachelor's degree in animal science from the University of Idaho. Last book you read, How the West Was Lost. Last movie you watched, Cinderella Man. Oh, dear. Music you just listened to, Climb Every Mountain.
The hills are alive.
Run! Run for your life! The hills are alive! Oh, Jesus! Oh, but here's the telling one. Public figure you admire most, Senator Tom Coburn, Oklahoma. Tom Coburn, wasn't that the guy who sat and who stood there impassively as a woman begged for help for her sick husband suffering from a traumatic brain injury who could not properly swallow liquid or food and begged for help from in the form of health care for her husband because they'd been booted out of the skilled care facility? Yeah, that Tom Coburn, the one who said government's not the answer. That's Rex Rammel, Wild West Animal Doctor's political hero. Make and model of your car, Dodge Ram. Oh, damn, now I have to sell the family truckster. Let's see, the press register, or the post register, which is an Idaho newspaper. The Post Register asked of Rex Rammel, Wild West veterinarian, 47 million Americans don't have health insurance. What role should the federal government play in making sure everyone has access to health care? You ready for this answer? Come on, you know the answer, right? Do I have to read this? Yeah, I got to read this. The federal government has no constitutionally mandated role in providing Americans with health insurance. The best thing our government could do is get out of the way and let the free market solve the problem. The only role government should play is making sure the drugs are safe and the playing field is fair. In other words, more corporate welfare. Jesus. More anarcho-randianism. Here's another jewel. Has human activity contributed to global warming? If so, what should be done about it? I do not believe the globe as a whole is warming. I believe parts may be, like the polar ice cap, but believe it is all part of the Earth's natural evolution and certainly not man-made. Should we do what we can to be good stewards of the Earth? Certainly. But to advocate extreme environmental policies that destroy our economy is foolish. Here's a cutie. Corey, this is just beautiful. I don't know how you found this so fast. Post Register. Almost everyone agrees that the U.S. should wean itself off foreign oil. Please check any of the alternatives you support. Now, remember, this guy's in Idaho. More offshore and domestic oil drilling? Yes. More nuclear energy? Yes. Coal? Yes. Wind and solar? Yes. Natural gas? Yes. Ethanol? Yes. An emphasis on public transit? No. I guess he's been to some of Don Blankenship's speeches and thinks that public transit's communist. The next thing you know, you're living five families to an 8x8 box over a subway grate. So, I guess we have to give Rex Rammel a new title, don't we? Rex Rammel, Wild West Animal Doctor and Eliminationist. Because I remind you, there will be no apology. There just won't be. And then there's Tasteless. Yes. I mean, Rex Rammel is an Rex Rammel, Wild West animal doctor and eliminationist. Is a vile souled anarcho Randian conservative freak. But he's fairly early in his career of getting his freak on. And he understands very, very clearly that if you want to be a repiglickin' these days, you better, by God, be ready to say some absolutely crazy things. Like, let's get hunting tags for that one, the president. Then there's a guy who has been honing his batshit crazy message for decades now. And he's so insane, he got himself a gig on Fox. I'm speaking, of course, of radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee, who just couldn't resist glomming on to the death of Senator Kennedy. He appeared on ABC Radio Networks to try to, ride Senator Kennedy's corpse a little bit. What else can you call it but that? And it makes me sick just saying it. Of course, it didn't make radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee be sick doing it because he has no conscience. Because he is, in fact, radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee. And consciences get in the way for that type. I won't read you the quote. Hear it for yourself.
Kennedy's death, will it be used to hype socialized medicine? Governor Huckabee thinks not. Here's this report.
Senator Ted Kennedy's death had barely hit the news before we started hearing calls that Congress must hurry and pass the health care reform bill and do it in his memory. That not only defies good taste, it defies logic. We certainly can and should respectfully recognize his years of advocacy and work for the things that he truly believed in. But there is no good reason to rush through a giant unread bill that would transform American health care and impact every citizen. But easily the worst reason to do it is in the name of someone who perhaps inadvertently gave us the most shining example of why this particular bill is so bad.
Here it comes.
Opponents deny that the bill would devalue older people's lives or encourage them to accept less care to save money. But it was President Obama himself who suggested that seniors who don't have as long to live might want to consider just taking a pain pill instead of getting an expensive operation to cure them. Yet when Senator Kennedy was diagnosed with terminal brain cancer at 77, did he give up on life and go home to take pain pills and die? Of course not. He freely did what most of us would do. He chose an expensive operation and painful follow-up treatments. He saw his work as vitally important, and so he fought for every minute he could stay on this earth doing it. He would be a very fortunate man if his heroic last few months were what future generations remember him most for. I want to see improvements in health care, too. But I think a better way to honor Ted Kennedy would be to ensure that every American has access to the latest private health care as good as what senators receive.
What an evil piece of excrescence. Radical fundamentalist Mike, cleric Mike Huckabee is. Do you have the gist of that argument? You got it? According to radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee, Senator Kennedy pursued a course of treatment against his terminal cancer so that he could live along a little bit longer and try to deny cancer patients the same sort of treatment. You evil, 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 evil little demon, you radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee. And then that little, come on, you got it. We are this little family of ours, this Horn family. We're very, very good at reading and hearing right-wing code and decoding it immediately. That last sentence. He would be a very fortunate man if his heroic last few months were what future generations remember him most for. That's code. And you know what it's code for. And I'm not going to give it air or life. Don't worry, radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huxterby. The world will not remember you for any such. We will remember that you were full of hate. We will remember that you spoke milksop words that were backed with acid and bile. We will remember that when 47 million Americans were suffering without health insurance, your answer was to make sure that they remained uninsured. We will remember that although the Constitution in Article 1 charges Congress with providing for the general welfare, you argued that Congress can do no such thing. You monster. You monster. You monster masquerading as a follower of the Prince of Peace, you monster. I've told you before, and I'll tell you again, the Repiglican Party. No shame, no gall, and more brass than a band marching down the street in a 4th of July parade. And let me reiterate, Repiglicans don't apologize. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Let's do go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
Hey, Bob.
Hey.
Hey, I just talked to my son, who, Mike, I think you know him.
Yes, yes.
He told me to give you a call. I ran into one of our local, no offense, religious fanatics that was picketing outside of Zach Space, his office. He's the Ohio congressman. And I was going down the street, and I thought I'd get into an intellectual fight with him. I guess I've been preparing for this all my life, and I didn't know how good I would do, but I had a good time with him. I walked up to him and said, what's going on here? And he says, we're protesting health care and the cost of Obama's health care bill. So he's a media seeker. You might have, his name is Dave Dubenhauer, and he's one to try to bring religious prayers into the huddles on football fields and so forth in Ohio, and he's got some national attention. So I confronted him on the street, and I said, let me ask you something, Dave. Did you protest Bush's war with the trillions of dollars we spent on the war? He said, how do you know I didn't? I said, don't dance with me and play that kid's game. Did you protest the war? He said, no, but I'm not a Republican. And he tried to give me a high five, tried to patronize me. I didn't fall for it. And we decided to continue our conversation. His son, I shouldn't say his son, he had another person on a lawn chair in front of Zach Space's office. And he said, well, you know, the media is biased. And he says, there was a study out by that NBC had 71% favorable Obama comments during the election and 29% negative. I said, okay. You know, I did my own poll on Fox. I said, you listen to Fox? He said, yeah. Well, the poll there was 100% positive for McCain and 100% negative for Obama. So what's your point? You know, so we sparred on that. They kept trying to dodge the health care issue. And, you know, I guess I played a little debating trap game with him, and I said, back what you just referred to, they call Obama a racist. I said he should be off the air, and I'm glad 46 sponsors canceled pulled out of his show. He says, oh, yeah, you don't believe in freedom of speech, do you? I said, yeah. I certainly do. You know, and that, I knew where it was going. So I said, well, wait a minute. Don't you remember the Dixie Chicks? All they said was they weren't proud of Bush being from the state of Texas. And they were deluged with organized Don't Buy Dixie Chick Records by Fox, by Rush Bimbo, you name it. And I said, weren't they trying to intimidate freedom of speech? Well, I was getting too intellectual for them at that point. And they said, well, I said, sure. Do you think any country star would step up to the plate and oppose the war after they saw what happened to the Dixie Chicks? I said, so that's intimidation of freedom of speech. So don't give me that crap about freedom of speech. So we continued to spar about that. And then he says, well, I don't have health insurance. I said, well, I'm sorry to hear that, Dave, and you're against the bill. That makes a heck of a lot of sense. That's pretty stupid. And I said, I have health insurance. And you know what, Dave? I don't even go to the doctor for preventative health care, as dumb as I am, because I'm afraid if I lose my job and I have a pre-existing condition, then I'll lose my house and anything else because I won't be able to get health insurance should something be found. I said, so do you understand why we need reform in this country, Dave? And for such, he's got a little local radio show on a Christian network here. And I was surprised how he was just slapped down on every point. And I guess I've been preparing for this for too long of a time.
You went loaded for bear and wound up shooting the what, rat?
Right, exactly. That's what it was. So I'm sure any Ohio listeners will know this Dave Dubenhauer. He's been in the media. He's a media hound, and I'm not. But he had no arguments for did you protest a trillion in the war, the health care reform, all the way down the line. He just wasn't prepared for it, and I'm not trying to be boastful or anything, but it's the right-wing crap. And I asked him about why are you protesting also besides the health care. He wanted a meeting with Zach Space, a town hall meeting. I told him, I said, I wouldn't have a town hall meeting either with some of the people that go to it. I said, a town hall meeting is where you ask me a question when I raise my hand and you courtesy listen to me. And if you have an opposing view, I listen to you and I don't boo you or yell or shout. I said, have you watched any of these meetings? I said, so they're not really town hall meetings. They're a circus contrived by the right and the Tea Party people. I don't even want to give dignity to disrespect tea. But the Tea Party people and the AstroTurf people, so turf people, and I said, why should he have a meeting unless people will conduct themselves in an orderly fashion? He had no answer for that. He said, well, you just see the news clips. I said, well, I saw enough news clips. And so it carried on a street corner like that for some time in front of Zach Spate's office until he finally retreated to his van, which was parked across from it. We had no hostile words. But he conveniently had something to do inside the van and didn't want to carry on any more conversation because I hate to say it, he didn't win one point, and I had an answer for all of the cliches from the right about media bias and everything else. And like I said, I prepared for this. I told Mike, it's like a football game. You make practice until you get out on the field. You don't know how good you are.
Right.
Well, I was a little better than I thought I was after I confronted him. And I will go to any meeting with Zach Space and represent our position on health care in a fair manner for the 47 million Americans. And again, no hero, but it was great to confront one of these looming tunes face to face. And there was no backing down, and he retreated to his van.
Well, what you and I'm sorry, your first name, please?
Dave.
Dave, the first thing that I have to say about this is bravo and congratulations. We need more people who are prepared to deal with these right-wingers such as you were. Secondly, you are giving validation to an argument that I have made over and over and over again, namely that on anything approaching a level playing field where the right-winger doesn't have a dump button or a microphone slide like this where he can make voices go up and down, or disappear entirely, in any instance where we remain calm and we remain fact-based, they can't win.
No. They live in the world of cliches. You know, if I have to hear about the tilting of major network bias, you know, just plain, I listen to it, and I cannot find the tone in whoever, Katie, Brokaw, any of them, that even approaches Fox, and you have to have a flaw in your intelligence to think you're watching the news and it's unbiased and it, there's no spin. I mean, if there were any other product, it would be revoked for misrepresentation. And I did hit one other point that I forgot to mention because I was just picking my shots with him because he has a radio show on a Christian network espousing his extremism. I said, you know, that's why we need the fairness doctrine. You believe that, Dave? He says, no. His name is Dave also. He says, no, I don't believe in that. Well, I said, they should have me on your station. So whatever you say, I could give my point of view and let the listeners decide what is the right course. But we are buried in this country, except with shows like yours, with just one perspective that people are trapped. You turn on the radio, you have no choice. There's no choice to listen to it. And people just, like lambs, kind of, well, that must be true. I hear it on 12 stations, the same message every day when they get their marching order memos, and they all want to be Rush Limbaugh. You know, it's just, it's stupid. Well, he doesn't believe in the fairness doctrine, which I hope that that issue surfaces up in the next year or two. That's all I have to say, buddy, but I appreciate your comments. And like I said, it was, there was a, well, Mike called it an ass whipping in Zanesville today. That's where it happened.
Oh, that's a, it's a beautiful account, Dave, and I really appreciate you sharing it with us. And, just talking to you is a pleasure because you've got you've done a great job with a fine son of yours.
Okay, well, thank you very much, sir. You have a great show, and I hope more people listen.
All right, thank you, Dave. Take care.
Thank you. Bye bye.
From Ohio, that's Dave. Dave is the father of our pal Michael, who, when he's able to, gets into the chat room and is known to one and all as Kid A. And I'm really glad that Michael talked his dad into calling, sharing that story. And look, you know, I got a little bit of vanity here. And I like to see validation of things that we have put forward so frequently. And that is, if we only have the courage to go and speak our minds and not hide, and we use the facts and we remain calm, and we have any that and we win, because we're arguing common sense and reason and logic, and the other side is arguing what? It's not even really arguing, is it? It's just naked gainsaying. It's like that the Monty Python skit where he goes in for an argument, and you're not arguing, you're simply gainsaying me. No, I'm not. It's that. But corollary to all of this is something that Dave sort of touched tangentially on, and that is there's not much point in trying to argue with them on the air. I played that clip the other night from the liberal guy trying to take apart the Hannity job, the life support system for a haircut. His argument, well, you know, they're asking... They're telling wounded veterans that they need to die. And what did Hannity do? At the mere mention of Sarah Palin, you gonna attack her children now? And boom! Off down the rabbit hole. They cannot argue their case in anything approaching a reasonable fashion. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. It's Jude from Seattle.
Well, hey, how are you, Jude?
Well, I'm doing okay. Tired, but getting stronger. I wanted to first send my my very best friend to Ferdinand his fracture, and that we'll be sending him some healing energy.
Well, I will tell him that, and he will be tickled to hear it.
Yeah, and it'll be kind of football energy. It won't be girl stuff energy.
Right, right. Gridiron energy.
And then I wanted to, with the last caller, Dave, it reminds me so much of what I see happening here in Seattle, and what I hear like on programs like yourself, the adults are becoming present. And what Dave did in that interchange with that fellow that was just so programmed, so incredibly programmed, that to get into a shouting match does absolutely nothing. But just standing in the presence of that strength that truth has, the fellow had to leave. Because, see, they cannot remain present when light comes and truth and goodness.
I think you're right. There has to be some value, Jude, to simply coming from a decent human place. And I'm not talking about a physical place, but a metaphysical place. I know the road to hell is paved with good intentions, but that's not what I'm talking about here. When we act out of concern and compassion for our fellow human beings, and we do so genuinely, every religious teaching I've ever studied says that that carries its own positive weight. So I think you're right in that regard. The only caveat I would add onto that though, Jude, is that the more that the adults come into the conversation, the more childish the other side is going to be.
Well, I don't want to make it sound like gentleness means that it has or goodness doesn't have strength, because I'll be the first if something is wrong. I have been really pissed off. And I'm a woman of peace.
Yes.
It's that anger that comes up, and you know, I don't know what the days are going to bring. It sounds pretty dark, and like there's an extraordinary amount of work to do. But each one of us, it's like listening to Dave, each one of us at those moments, becomes stronger. And when we share that with one another, it's that critical mass beginning to rise up, and not to be afraid. I don't know if someday the boots and flowers will be in front of a barricade. I don't really look into the future, but when I really listen and do my research and understand how critically vulnerable this country is and the place where we're at, but I don't want to necessarily take you off on one of my areas that I live in. I wanted to do follow-up on that veterinarian and that piece that came out of Idaho.
Yes, Rex Rammel.
Well, I sat with that, and I went and did a stand, and I came back, and I didn't want to talk to that individual. So I did some research on the governor, Governor Otto.
Mm-hmm.
Pulled up his website and kind of went through things and found out that he had served in the National Guard. And then I called the governor's office, and someone answered, a lovely young woman by the name of, I think it was Amy or April. And I told her that, and I tried to be very, not to prattle like I'm probably doing now, but I just wanted to see if there was some solace that they could provide for me, and then just kind of went through, what had happened. Didn't mention the gentleman's name, but I said, my concern comes. I said, there's so many women throughout the country that carry combat boots for their sons or friends, or someone has given them those boots. And then with the white flowers, I said, we do that to honor all the soldiers that have been killed for peace. And I said, to hear something like that come up, to have an individual trying to run for a governorship, and then to attack your, and this is not that he was attacking your governor, but this is his opponent. And I said, that's a serious individual, that something's not right there. And I said, I just, wanted to call. And then she stopped me and she goes, well, ma'am, I don't know what to do for you. I'm sorry. And I said, you already have. I said, you listen to me. Because you've been gracious. And I said, there are no answers other than I'm just from Seattle. I wanted to send my best to the governor. And that's what today was. And it was, I feel so sad for so many things, Bob, and I try so hard to do, like all of us together try to do. And it's so tiring to have to walk through like that swamp that you said. But then when we get over to the other side, like where Dave is now from having to confront that fellow in truth, where probably millions of us are, it's a very good place to be in, Bob. And it doesn't maybe change anything. My call, I never come from an ego place that someone's going to listen to me. But gosh, I could be that 50th call or that 100th call, and someone goes, man, we're getting a lot of calls.
Yeah.
So it's...
You're absolutely right. We can't... we cannot extrapolate from our oneness or our singleness the fact that that our voice or our intention is singular as well. And so, well, you get it, Jude. You get it big time. And I just appreciate the good energy you bring to these things, because it takes a lot of guts to reach out to to Mike Otter's office. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Otter is a Democrat. I could be. I'm not sure.
I couldn't find it. It didn't say. I mean, I just kind of perused the website and just kind of wanted to glean some information, because I knew that I had. Because I always know when I have to do something, and a lot of times I don't want to do it. Like, I don't like calling into shows. I mean, radio programs like this. I just go, like, I don't want to do it. But for some reason, just the comfort level of listening to you and all the people that call in, because they're so wonderfully diverse. And it just is, it fills me up. And it, you know, when I'm real exhausted, I can come away, even if the information is so bone, you know, deadening, and, you know, it takes us to places that we don't want to go. At least we've worked through something. Someone's called in. You've given input back, and emails come in, and you've afforded that opportunity for all of us to have a voice, you know, that we're not invisible, that we are real, and in our own place, we're all doing these things in different parts of the country and the world, but we find each other like two programs you have.
Well, what you've just said offers a great deal of validation for the attempt that we continue to make here, Jude, because you've described it to a T.
Oh.
And it just confirming that we are more than the sum of our parts, and that we and that even the parts are greater than what we imagine. When someone from your part of the world can hear a Southerner in that Southern accent talking, you know, common, decent humanity, or when say, wow, that, you know, they're still down there, this is worth continuing, then we have served our purpose. And I'm really, really grateful for the kind words, because that kind of validation means a great deal, because, you know, it's not. And this is not me climbing up on the cross or anything, but it's not always easy to crawl in. But anybody who does this can tell you there are days that you don't want to crawl in behind the microphone. After the day that we had yesterday and the night we had yesterday, frankly, for me, this is one of those days. But you just gave me a compelling reason for why it was the right thing to do it. You know, beyond the Horn family and the folks who share their time to listen to the program, I don't have a boss. And if I decide to mail one in, I can mail one in. But I can guarantee that on the nights when I have to be away, I will just loathe being away. But on those days when I think, you know, maybe just make it a long weekend, to heck with it, and then I get behind the microphone anyway, I get a call like this from you, Jude. And I know why I'm doing this. I know why everyone associated with the Horn is doing this, because it is special beyond special.
Well, I just was, you know, listening to Dave. It was like I was going, you go, Dave. Yes, I'm right there with you. I've got my boots and my flowers, and I'm standing right behind you. Don't have to say a word, because he's one man to another young man. Because these are not, these are individuals that are really profoundly stunted in so many ways, emotionally and intellectually. You know, and you wonder how many, and then it goes into the whole Christian right. You know, when James Dobson started that Focus on the Family back in the 70s and wrote that book, The Other Discipline,
mm-hmm.
a lot of these young people, I'm 61, are probably in their late 40s, are the fruition of that discipline and that maybe 30, that kind of indoctrination. And that control that is being permeated through all of them. And then I look at these people and I just go, oh my God, what is this? And then I understand how fractured and how broken and how scared and how unevolved. And yet they're, you know, there would be hope there. But it's also the reality that, you know, I don't do crazy well. I just don't do crazy anymore. I'm extremely outspoken, probably too much for my own good. But, you know, it comes from a place that I think is good and kind and loving. You know, I just, I won't go on, but, you know, my best to Ferg and your family. And thank you, Dave, and thank you, Bob, very much.
Thank you, Jude, and have a wonderful weekend.
You too.
Bye. I'm a privileged person. Not in the way that most people count privilege, because this misguided nation often measures privilege by bank accounts and dollars. But I know that I am privileged in the extreme to have comments and thoughts and intentions and passion and compassions that are allied here with us, like what Jude offers. It is a form of wealth we are all too incapable of measuring and quantifying as easily and as quickly as we do money. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Okay, well, if for some reason you could hear me but I couldn't hear you, don't hesitate. Do try back. So look where an hour went. It never ceases to amaze me. That is the first hour of this front porch, Friday on the front porch. What will you make of the second hour? That, of course, is the question. We'll find out. We'll take a little break. Coming up, the Green News Report that we should have run last night, but I wasn't here, so we'll run it tonight, a day late, and never mind the date that Brad and Desi give. It doesn't matter. It's still current, still fresh. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to the horn. Chime in.
We come to call the pipes and flutes and fiddles and all, in case of death we've even brought a keener. So if you're glum and feeling down, just be like us and back the clown, and soon there'll be a change in your demeanor. Rum da da doo do, have a dee da da doo do. Rum da da doo do, can do it on. Rum da da doo do, have a dee da da doo do. Rum da da doo do, can do it on. I put me money on a horse today, but with the race he'd run away, or so our friend was in the know, he told me. 20 lengths ahead of us, he proudly cantered past the post, but woe was me, he lost the bloomin' jockey. Rum, dum, de, doo, 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 have a dee, 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 doo, rum, dum, de, doo, 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 doo. Now of all the places that I've seen, from China to the Caribbean, or all across the globe, from here to Ireland, from Ballycastle to Tralee, the Coral to the Liffey, there's nowhere else on earth quite like this island. Warming in the evening in the evening, with music in the key of D, you'll be dancing carry sets until the morning. Run, jump, the tip to toe, how many have to lift you to? Run, jump, the tip to toe, from the dum. Run, jump, the tip to toe, run, jump, the tip to toe, dancing carry sets until the morning.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, August 27, 2009.
Happy anniversaries, sort of. The politics of fracking.
Fracking?
How about some weed killer in your water?
Mmm.
Delicious. Plus, another loss for the environment.
For all those whose cares have been our concern, the work goes on, the cause endures, the hope still lives, and the dream shall never die.
All of that and more straight ahead. Prepare for 6 minutes of green news. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this is your Green News Report. Okay, it is a very sad week indeed, particularly for the environment, which not a lot of folks are talking about when it comes to Teddy Kennedy. We'll talk about that in a moment. But first, these green news headlines from Desi Doyen.
Well, you know how there are seemingly small events that eventually spin out and lead to big changes that no one at the time could possibly have imagined? You know, like moldy bread leading to penicillin or Bill Gates getting access to a computer in junior high? Well, this week is the 150th anniversary of one of those seemingly small events, the drilling of the very first oil well. Up until August 27, 1859, there were only a few uses for the small amounts of oil that naturally seeped up through the ground. But two guys in Titusville, Pennsylvania, correctly guessed that there was more where that came from. Took them a year and a half to do it, but 150 years ago, they drilled 70 feet and discovered a pool of oil and ultimately changed the course of human history. And we also have another anniversary. This week also marks the fourth anniversary of Hurricane Katrina's landfall on the city of New Orleans. 4 years later, of course, much work remains to be done. The recovery and rebuilding process has been uneven at best. Surprisingly, the Obama stimulus and recovery bill allocated no funds for recovery for Katrina because the Army Corps of Engineers still doesn't have coastal restoration projects for the area that are shovel ready.
I remember well when Katrina came ashore. We were down in Crawford covering Cindy Sheehan at the time, and I remember when someone sent me the notice from the Weather Service, from NOAA, that there would be thousands of deaths, and I thought it was a joke. I wouldn't read it on the air until we went to a commercial break, checked it out, and it was for real. It was stunning, and it's even more stunning, I suppose, 4 years later that we're still looking back on it and that things have not been cleaned up down there.
Yes, it's a huge story. There's much analysis available at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. Now, how much weed killer would you like in your drinking water? Now, you wouldn't.
Plenty.
Yeah, well, you wouldn't mind if somebody added just a little now, would you?
Sounds delicious.
A new study released last week from the National Resources Defense Council shows spikes in atrazine in drinking water supplies around the country. Atrazine is one of the most common weed killers and is found in levels well above federal standards in communities across the country, especially those near cornfields. Yet the NRDC says no municipal water systems alerted their customers to the spikes. Although the EPA and the manufacturers say there is no evidence that atrazine is a harm to humans, the European Union banned use of the chemical back in 2005.
The European Union doesn't have the kind of corporate control of their EPA that we do here.
Recent studies are showing that atrazine may be an endocrine disruptor that leads to birth defects, and the EPA says they will review atrazine in 2010.
Delicious. Take your time. Do we have a list of the communities where this atrazine exists in the water
supply?
Well,
it's actually five states that are now suing to get this kind of review done sooner.
And we'll have more information on that at our website.
Another water quality issue has surfaced in communities adjacent to oil and gas exploration, and fracking appears to be the culprit. No,
fracking.
It's not the pretend curse word from the TV show.
Oh.
Fracking is short for hydraulic fracturing, an extraction technique in which toxic chemicals and water are injected under high pressure into the ground to fracture the rock and push out hard-to-get-at oil and gas. The process of fracking is unregulated because the Bush administration took away the EPA's authority to investigate fracking in the 2005 energy bill.
Well, frack them.
Residents who live near such drilling sites have increasingly complained that their water supplies are contaminated with all sorts of nasty stuff, but naturally the extraction companies insist their processes are not responsible. After years of mounting complaints, the EPA is now using Superfund's authority to test the water. According to an investigation released this week by online investigative journalism site ProPublica, early results show at least three wells in Wyoming have tested positive for chemicals used in fracking, confirming that such contamination does take place. A bill has been introduced in Congress to protect drinking water supplies, but its future is now on hold. The passing of the Lion of the Senate, Senator Edward Kennedy, this week marks a loss for the environment as well. Teddy Kennedy was also a champion of the nation's environment and public lands through his 47 years in the Senate. Among his many accomplishments, he sponsored the first bill to establish mileage requirements for the very first time. He also worked to expand mass transit and push to clean up and protect our water supplies and natural resources. He was a crucial vote to passage of clean energy legislation now on hold in the Senate. It will take months before his seat is filled, but he will never be replaced.
He will not, and the dream does live on. In fact, his brother Bobby's son, Bobby Kennedy Jr., is a great environmentalist working with the Water Keepers Alliance. He's been a big supporter of our work at BradBlog. And so, in fact, the dream lives on. Read much more about that at our blog, greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
There is a new wave of change all around us. And if we set our compass true, we will reach our destination. The work begins anew. The hope rises again. And the dream lives on.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95? Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
We are back 20 minutes past the hour, or almost. Let's go to the email bag for a minute or two. Oh, let's see. Where to go? I conjured her. We've heard from our pal Allison, referring to the Rex Rammel Wild West animal doctor and eliminationist. Allison says, Bob, I'm writing you from my empty desk. It's my last day. Not a minute too late. 2. Two words. Rex Rammel. Ugh. Ice cold sushi, fresh brewed beer, and civilization, here I come. Love, Allison. Oh. Keep a seat open next to you at the sushi bar, would you, Allison? We don't have just a heck of a lot of great sushi around here, although there is some, to be fair, there is some. And, think of us when you go for the tekamaki or the, the spider roll or any of that yummy stuff. And me, there's two. I like the Sapporo with my sushi, and I also like the Ichiban. It's right tasty. Going back to my pathetic attempt at song, we have a quick comment from our pal Marty. The hills might be alive, but do the hills have eyes? Oh, of course they do. Of course they do. Joe the Foxhole Atheist writes in, and this is quite thought-provoking. Surprise, it's happening on the horn. Joe says, over the past year, I've heard voices from both sides of the aisle talk about what people should and should not be allowed to say. This troubles me greatly because both sides are trying to destroy free speech in America. There are two reasons why we need to stop trying to silence the right-wingers. One is because it is our duty as liberals to defend the Constitution. That means allowing the most despicable people to say the nastiest things they want to. The other reason is because the hate speech of the right is our best weapon against them if we exploit it properly. Instead of voicing outrage at what the wingnuts are saying, we need to calmly question them, ask them to elaborate their ideas. By asking questions in a tone of interest and curiosity, you will trick a person into letting their guard down and they will speak more openly about their true feelings. By doing this, we make the right wing do our job for us, revealing how anti-American and fascist these people are. And I agree. The point being, in talking about people like Rex Rammel, Wild West animal doctor and eliminationist, and what he has said and how noxious it is. Well, let me see if I can just get this out of my mouth right. There are laws in this country against threatening the life of the President of the United States. During the 8 tormented years of George W. Dingleberry, he said Dingleberry, yeah, it's a horn intern junior grade Ferg is back in the studio. But during the 8 tormented years of George W. Dingleberry, see, this is too easy. In a minute, I'll start talking about his vice president, and he'll be absolutely on the floor in paroxysms of laughter every time I say Dick Cheney. Oh, to be 13 again. No, not for a minute. You couldn't pay me. But anyway, during those 8 tormented years, there was one fellow who told a joke. I remember this story. Look it up. I don't think it's a Snopeser. There's a guy who wound up in jail over telling a joke in a bar, and it was a joke, you know, the punchline and everything. You know, the punchline was something about a burning bush. The guy was charged. So I agree with Joe the Foxhole Atheist about the need to defend the Constitution and the need to for more speech. I mean, that's an old aphorism inside the First Amendment jurisprudence, that the remedy to bad speech is not to silence the bad speech. The remedy to bad speech is good speech and more of it. Hence the existence of the horn, I might add. Not directly, but certainly influenced by that thinking. So I understand that. But the question is the equal application of the law. During those 8 tormented years of the Bush administration, people were charged and harassed and persecuted and prosecuted for things far less egregious than saying that there ought to be Obama tags, in other words, Obama hunting licenses, sold in Washington, D.C. far, far less threatening than that. So, you know, I would suggest that Rex Rammel, Wild West animal doctor and eliminationist, at the very minimum, deserves a little visit from the humorless guys in black suits with skinny black ties with little curly things coming out of their ears. It's only right. And, of course, Joe also has expressed what I was getting at with the non-apology apology or the non-condemnation that came from Senator Crapo's office in Idaho, in which he said, no, I said Crapo, Ferg. No. His name is spelled C-R-A-P-O, Ferg. C-R-A-P-O, Crapo. But he pronounces it Crapo because everybody goes, if he pronounces it Crapo. Anyway, Senator Crapo's office said, you know, we've got big debates going on in this country, and this kind of talk doesn't help. But they didn't say why it doesn't help. And the reason it doesn't help is precisely what Joe the Foxhole Atheist is talking about. What the Republicans are worried about is the fact that this, you know, pulls the rubber mask right off their face. And bang, there you go. We see them for what they are. So, yeah, Joe, I get it. I really do, and you're right. You want to chime in? You want to send an email? You know how to do that? Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid. @gmail.com. It's really that easy, and I read as many of them on the air as I can possibly get to. We'll go to the phones right now, though. Elaine is with us. Hey, Elaine, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how are you?
I'm good, you?
As usual. Actually, I'm doing okay at the moment. Been done with chemo for a couple of months now. So, health-wise, except for them dying, going to the doctor every 2 days for one thing or another, and them trying to pressure me into surgery. I almost gave in last week, and then I regained my sanity. I'm having major back problems. My back from when I was thrown from the horse back in 98 never healed correctly, because I was diagnosed 2 years before that with severe osteoporosis. So the compression fracture never healed correctly. Anyways, because I was in bed for so long during the chemo and everything, my back just really, I couldn't do any of my exercises or anything because I was so sick. So it just accentuated my back problems. And they're wanting to do a back fusion. I can't get any of them to explain to me, though, if my back didn't heal correctly and still isn't healed from 1998, why are things going to change if they do a fusion in my back? How is it going to heal now?
and I think, most honest surgeons and neurosurgeons will tell you that the success rate on back surgery is not that, you know, it's still kind of a 50-50 proposition. So.
Oh, well, they're telling me that the back fusion is up to like 86%. And I've had two of them say similar things, between 75 and 86%. I'm still not going to put my, I'm still fighting to keep out of a wheelchair just because of my joints and my legs. I'm not going to end up in one because of screw up, you know, during surgery, which I swore I would never do again after the last one I had, or the last orthopedic. Anyways, I'm calling in for a couple of reasons.
Okay.
First of all, you were just talking about the direct threats against Obama. I don't know if you heard, on CNN earlier today, they had on Rick Sanchez's show, they were talking about, they had a clip from the pastor of, you know, remember the black person, the black man at Obama's town hall.
The one that was carrying the AK-47 or some such.
Exactly.
Yes.
Okay. They had a clip of his pastor's sermon the night before the town hall. where he came right out and said, you couldn't get any more plainly than what he said, that Obama needs to be killed and his wife and children need to suffer.
I believe that was the upshot of the sermon, yes.
Okay, so you did hear it?
Yes.
Oh, I must have missed you talking about it.
I think I talked about it. I didn't run the audio. It was just too sickening.
I don't understand. I don't understand why he can't. I mean, between what I heard, and I'm sure you remember back in February, and the Secret Service came, and they apparently checked it out. They said that they checked out this pastor, but like you were just saying, if anybody had done anything like this during the Bush administration, we'd still be behind bars.
Oh, under the jail. Under the jail. And,
yeah.
But along the lines of the issue you're raising, Elaine, next to the issues raised by Joe the Foxhole Atheist in his email, there's something that needs to be borne in mind. And that is, I have argued on a number of occasions that in this country, the First Amendment has largely been reduced to little more than a life support system for the religion industry. If something was done with that murder-minded pastor, what you would immediately hear is, they're persecuting me for my faith in Jesus.
Well, he's supposed to be coming on Rick Sanchez's show on Monday. You know that, right?
I wasn't aware. I don't get CNN, so I'm kind of, yeah.
Yeah, he sent them an email and said that and they said that they spoke to him, and he is going to be on the show on Monday, rather. But I've asked my uncle about this, my uncle the priest, and when he was here about a month and a half ago, we got into this long discussion, and he just kept saying that he never watched the news and has no idea about anything that's going on. He does now. I gave him a few books to take with him, including The Family, which he was calling me. He was in the hospital last week and was calling me constantly saying that this has to be a fiction. This can't possibly be true.
If I may ask, what flavor of priest is he?
He's a Jesuit. He's a Catholic priest. He's the director of the St. James Society, and he's supposed to be officiating at something tonight for Ted Kennedy.
If he goes through Jeff Charlotte's book, he's not going to come away thinking it's fiction anymore, because what goes on at C Street is very, very real and very, very awful. I suspect that he may be a little bit suspicious of it simply because of the long history of libels and slanders against the church, the Roman Catholic Church.
I think it's a combination of that, Bob, and he spent most of the past 35 years in South America. And when he comes up to the state, he comes up every year, but it's only for a week to 2 weeks, and he's usually lecturing, visiting with my mother, and trying to raise money for the St. James Society that he's the director of. But otherwise, and they don't have TV or anything down there, and he doesn't bother except for the news coming out of Venezuela and the politics, how it affects his Indian people up in the mountains. And that's also what gives him a lot more of an open mind than most other Catholic priests that I've spoken to.
Well, if he's been in South America that long, he's probably well aware of and perhaps even supportive of what's commonly referred to as liberation theology.
Yeah. He won't come right out and say it, but, yeah. Let's put it this way. When I lived up at the yoga ashram, the first summer I was up there and the kids were there, he was there for 3 weeks with me. He spent more than half of the time that we were there in the room reading Eastern philosophy books and is still reading them to this day. And he thinks I need to go back to reading Eastern philosophy instead of all these political books. I'm reading the book on the history of the progressive movement right now.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, we got into this talk, and I think a lot of it does have to do with his. He's just shocked that this could actually be going on. and people know about it and nothing has been done. But since he's been back this time, and it looks like he may not be able to go back to South America now. He had surgery, he's got complications, and they were making special arrangements for him to be able to officiate at the funeral or whatever he's officiating at tonight. But we got into this really long talk. He thinks it's unreal. He did listen to a few minutes, believe it or not, of Mike's show the night he was here. Unfortunately, it was a night that Mike was nonstop
hammering religion.
Yeah. And my uncle went away with, "That's all this guy talks about." I tried to.
Well, thank God you didn't. Thank God you didn't tune him in on a prayer meeting Wednesday.
Yeah. Well, the thing I tried to ask Uncle Bob, how can these, if these people are reading a completely different Bible than the one I read as a child? I've been a retired Catholic now for quite a few years.
That's recovering Catholic, yes.
Well, both. I was recovering and now I'm retired. I'm not going back, period. I'm completely retired. But anyways, you know, it's just, it's nothing like, and I've been to a lot of other churches when I was younger, and it's nothing like anything. Even in a lot of the Southern Baptist congregations that I went to a couple of services of when I was younger, the stuff that's coming out today is the things that these people are doing in the name of, quote, God are just unreal. And how they can justify their actions by saying, like George Bush, his crusades, because God told them to do it. I'm really hoping that, in fact, I told Uncle Bob last week after it came out, God needs to constantly talk to both Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann. I think the two of them, God needs to tell them they need to run together in 2012. I just think that would be an excellent Republican ticket, don't you?
I'm having little sweat beads break out along my hairline at the mere thought of it. You know, I was thinking Mike Huckabee, Sarah Palin, you know, that works. And I mean, I want the real rumpiness of this rump former national party to be on full display in 2012. I mean, I want them to nominate somebody who will come out and drink strychnine on stage and handle snakes and speak in tongues and roll on the floor. I mean, I want it all.
Sarah's done exorcisms.
Yes. I want them to do exorcisms at the Republican National Convention.
Well, I'm sure if we can get God to tell her to.
Or if we can just get somebody to say it to her and tell her that he's God.
Yeah. I mean, but he says it's ridiculous. To me, it's just sickening. And I was talking to a friend of mine who also does some radio last night about Glenn Beck. I have a problem. You know where I live, and we're not going to stay the town I'm in.
Right.
Because I've had major problems once on this show, from this show with somebody listening, and several times from another show that somebody actually said my full name and my address, and we had talked, and before he said my address, I had said I live on Main Street. Anyways, I had major problems, and the local police basically told me that, well, if I wasn't involved in a radical communist group, then these threats wouldn't happen.
Oh, please.
And, you know, I've told you before about what happened to Democratic headquarters here in this town. It had to be closed up because of vandalism, and it was literally on the other side of the wall from the police station. This is not a real supportive town for progressives.
To say the least.
Democrats. The Tea Party, forget it. I wasn't after my landlord owns a print shop, and the signs that he was asked to, he's the other 2% of the progressives here in this town, and he was asked to print out some signs. He refused to print them out, and he was vandalized, and it kind of scares me when that happens. But anyways, I won't go into detail on that, but yeah, things have gotten really bad, and I don't know if you heard Mike read my email a couple of times about the lady who had been helping me to do laundry, Jerry.
Okay.
Or we'll call her Jerry.
Yes.
And, you know, I freaked out a couple of months ago when we had got into this long diatribe, and she brought me this video of the 7 days of Armageddon or tribulation, whatever the heck.
Oh, yes.
And they were passing it around the local. She's a Catholic, supposedly. And they were passing it around her rosary group, watching it. Obama is the Antichrist. And she was going on it. I had a poster that my son had.
Obama's
had.
Only got five letters in it. Oh, wow. See what they've done to me? I know. There's no hope.
We had a thing going on. Have you joined the group on Facebook with the fire department? We want them to shut down the government takeover of fire departments. We're adding the police, the schools, the Social Security, Medicare, et cetera. I mean, all the socialized stuff.
Yeah, Department of Highways, sure.
Right, right. All that needs to be closed down because it's all socialized. But anyways, Jerry and I got into a conversation. We still were able to get along and decide not to talk about politics. She keeps bringing it up, though. And even when I've shown her that what the conservanets call that Obama wants to kill newborn babies is actually just what it actually is. I've got the paperwork from Chicago that's online that I printed out to show her that all he did was reject a bill that repeated what a bill just before it had done, because if you pass a bill that repeats it or something that legally, it can make it invalid. If you do it twice, like double jeopardy or something, I don't know. But anyways, she said no, that he rejected it because I'm like, Jerry, it was already on the books. And this is the same argument you get into them when they say that the government's coming to get your guns. The Supreme Court had ruled just last year that the government cannot take your firearms.
Unconstitutional? Oh, okay.
It strengthened the Second Amendment. And it just basically said that they can't do it. You have to have, there's a lot more hoops and things that you have to go through to even make gun law changes after the Supreme Court ruling last year. But I tried to show Jerry that these people are twisting. Well, she's the one also that I wrote in my last letter. Glenn Beck she was all upset, because Walter Cronkite had died. But thank God we've got Glenn Beck to replace them. And this isn't just Jerry. This is 98% of the people in this town that think this way.
Yeah.
And to me, it's getting to the point where it's getting very scary. Last weekend, there was a thing in the local paper about some locals walking around with exposed firearms. Nothing was done about the people that were hanging Obama in effigy at the tea parties. The cops were sitting there smiling with everybody at it. I'm afraid to stay. I can't afford to move on my own. My 19-year-old son is working two jobs, full-time plus taking 12 hours of classes at the University of Guam, living in a dorm, getting some money from Voc Rehab to help him out. He's going to take out student loans, and this is, I had told people in the chat room where I'm planning on moving. I'm moving to Guam. Yes, I realize it's still part of the United States, but it's really kind of got its own compartmentalized government. I mean, yes, they've got, you know, senator and representative or something up there, but I guess they don't have much clout. I'm not sure how it works, but because, and even though a medicine that helped me a great deal is, it's legal in California and Hawaii for medical reasons, they haven't actually passed that it's legal in Guam. However, because they fall under the same circuit court or superior court, they're both in the 9th or 11th circuit or whatever it is, nobody prosecutes anyone for medical cannabis there. It's just a waste of time, because if they take it to court, the lawyers use the fact that they're under basically the same laws as Hawaii and California. So, but anyways, as far as their government, they really kind of do things their own way. That influx of military people that was supposed to happen in Guam never happened, or it certainly didn't happen. There were supposed to be like 20,000 people moving. I think the total was like 150 families at the most, because of the cutbacks and everything, and they decided not to shut the base down in Japan. But the bottom line is that the island is about 75% native, and they really don't want to be a part of the United States. And they're starting, like they've done in Puerto Rico in the past, they're starting to get more vocal watching all the stuff that's going on over here right now. And according to my son and what I've read on their online radio or television websites and news websites out of Guam, they're a very progressive community in the way that they run that country. And so I was been joking with Nicole, and I started joking with Mike and Kathy. I was sending them the pictures that my son sent me of the place that his fiance and her mother are buying that's going to have a guest house out back, and his fiance's mother wants me to move down there and I can move into the guest house. It's right on the beach. And I thought my son was joking a couple of months ago when he sent me an email, and my two daughters got a kick out of it because he said, Mom, the only thing that would make my life perfect is to have you here with me for your to spend your, quote, final days lying on the white sand beaches of Guam, looking out over the South Pacific with a glass of wine in one hand and something else in the other.
Hear, hear.
And, you know,
except for the final days part.
Well, yeah. I'm fighting like hell. Right now I'm not looking at final days. I don't want to. I'm not going to. I'm not giving up. So, and right now I'm at a stable, I'm back to being on a stable level as far as the cancer goes, so I'm not concerned. My main concern was, though, and had been once I found out that CJ was serious, was I was concerned about the availability of medical care, because unless you're directly tied to the base, of what I've been able to see, there's not a good selection of doctors that would be of it. And my benefits, well, at least as long as they're still a territory under the U.S., all of my benefits transfer to Guam. But my son did some research, and he's gone and sat down with a group of orthopedics that are, and some other doctors, but mainly it was the group of orthopedics that we were concerned about, because he also has our genetic disorder, and he plans on staying in Guam. He's going to graduate from the University of Guam, and he wants to stay there. His fiance is going to leave for 4 years to go to medical school and come back, and then she can be my doctor. But anyways, he's gone and sat down with these doctors, and they've agreed to take both of us on as patients for free.
It sounds like you've got the beginnings of a plan, or actually far more than the beginnings.
Well, he found out this morning that he's going to be getting a lot more money as far as financial aid goes, and he also wants to take out a student loan. We had been planning on trying to get me there next summer, but he said with the extra money, he thinks we'll be able to do it by Christmas. So he came on Skype earlier today and told me to start packing.
Well, then get packing and make sure you take your computer with you and make sure you, well, it sounds like he's obviously got decent internet, so, you know, you can take the horn with you and stay in touch.
Well, what I told, and I'll tell you and everybody in the room, some people are saying we all need to pack up and move. Nicole was joking to me one night when I was sending her the pictures and sent it back and said, yeah, we can develop our own progressive paradise. You know, that's not such a bad idea.
No, and you know, a place, see, I have this thing, especially the older I get, the crankier I get, I have this thing about not freezing. And I guess that's going to come as, well, it just points me up for being a pathetic, shallow human being.
No, not at all. Well, I have the opposite.
But I want a warm place, and I'm not averse to learning a second language, but just enough English speaking to help me get by until I do.
87 degrees year-round in Guam.
Darn, another day in paradise.
Yeah. Anyways,
I'm told in the chat room that our pal Sparky says the University of Guam has the best surfing beach on the island.
Yeah, my son's on the paddling team.
Wow.
Along with everything else that he's doing, how he can do it all. I guess that's what being a 19-year-old kid. I was doing a lot back then now, but I look at it now and it's like, good grief. But anyways, getting back, leaving paradise for a few minutes, not very long, my son is actually, his girlfriend, his fiance is going to take a video camera and the computer to his paddling thing this afternoon in Guam, which is it'll be at 11 o'clock tonight, which is 1 o'clock in the afternoon in Guam. He's trying out for the United States men's team.
Oh, my.
So, for paddling.
That's awesome.
She's going to try to get it and show it so that I can watch it. She's going to try to Skype it. That's the other thing. The whole island has free Wi-Fi.
Well, yeah, what am I reading here? It's the island is what?
People are called
38 miles long and 3 miles wide at the widest place.
Yeah. And the people, the natives there are called Chamorro, and they're part Micronesian and some Hispanic that had come over in the late 1700s or early 1800s in boats. They all speak English. They also speak their own Chamorro language, but usually only at ceremonies and everything. And CJ, gosh, it's been over a year now, was actually formally adopted into the Chamorro tribe. He's pretty well known on the island, especially since he was unemployed for 7 months and everybody was trying to help him when, you know, their unemployment rate with the natives was probably 80% or 90%, and they were trying to help my son. But CJ had a little bit more schooling. He was already certified in several computer thingamajiggers, security and stuff. So, but anyways, he's got a great job right now, plus he's in school, and he's preferring, he said he gets more work done living in the dorm. I don't remember that in my dorm days.
No.
I guess things have changed. I mean, it was Friday night this morning in Guam, and I was talking to CJ. He was, like I told Ferg, CJ was playing Xbox and getting ready to finish up a paper that's due on Monday. So I'm really proud of him. I was afraid there for a while he was unemployed and homeless, but he's really doing good. And he's really getting an education from Mom's email of what's going on over here. He was going to try to convince some of the guys in the dorm to let him tape Beck's show today, because I'm sure you heard today was going to be the highlight, he said, of his career when he would unveil his master plan.
Jesus.
I've got some Beck audio to run here in a few minutes, so you know we'll all get our little Mackinacs on.
And, today?
No, I make a point of not seeing it.
Well, today I watched it mainly because it affects me personally living here. Because people in this town, they worship Beck. And, you know, what happens to Beck usually shows up here in town the next day. I'm sorry, what were you going to say?
No, I was just saying, ooh, at the idea of worshiping you. Yeah.
Well, they have for a very small town in a county that the whole county has less than 2,000 year-round residents, there were over 600 people at the Tea Party back in April, and they're already getting plans out. They've moved the 9/12 party up to the high school. At least it's not going to be in the middle of town. But they're going to have something going on at the courthouse in the morning, and then they're moving the actual whatever the devil they're doing up to the high school, which is a ways out of town. But, they worship him. At the end of his show today, remember the music that they were playing for, I believe it was gay marriage? Was it Fortuna? That horrible, scary movie, or was it gay marriage? Was that it?
You got me stumped here, Elaine.
They were playing that music in the background, one of their advertisements. It was on, like, CNN and everything. It was on the regular networks, too, ABC, NBC, and CBS, Fox, whatever. But, well, it may not have been on NBC, but it showed atomic blasts going off, that the world was coming to an end because of, I'm pretty sure it was gay marriage that they were saying that they didn't say that the world was gonna end, but that's what the pictures implied.
Right.
Well, he basically had the same thing at the end of his show. Extremely scary music. I tried to record the show today, but I ended up having to record it on my iPod Touch, which has been a gift from paradise, literally, that has come in. I can write emails laying down, even when I was in traction in the hospital. It's great. But anyways, I tried to record it. My computer, my recording equipment is broke. The software keeps crashing. So I used my iPod to record it. I have no idea what the quality is going to be like. But this video thing that he had at the end of his show, it showed all the very patriotic, the founders of the country. It even showed the snake, the don't tread on me thing, and then it showed the Revolutionary War right after that. I can't figure that one out, but, you know, it went all through history, World War II, a whole bunch of, you know, clips. The whole time, this satanic-sounding music, this horrible Armageddon-like music playing in the background, that the music itself, without seeing any of the pictures, would give anybody the creeps. Patriots.
Well, you got to be, you know, you got to consider Beck's demographic, though. He's got to be, nuance and subtlety are not something he can really afford to play with on his program. You're talking about people of substantially diminished capacity, lower IQs, and...
Well, and that's what scares me, though, is the man is a con man. Yes, he's evil, he's a monster, and people that have not dealt with real con men before, they're going to take that one little bit of truth that he has in there and assume that everything he says has to be the truth. I mean, when I've pointed facts out to Jerry and to another person here in town, yes, but this is happening. That may be true, but this and this and this. And no, it's all lies. No, but you just said he tells the truth. No, I said he told the truth about that three-word phrase, not the hour worth of yapping that he did. But it's just enough to make people comfortable, and he normally starts something out at the beginning.
Well, he's got that voice.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, and that's the other thing, is I found the video online. There's a video online of I don't know, when he was on CNN 3 or 4 years ago, and I know he's done it several times since then, of him saying that he is not a journalist, he is a comedian and an entertainer first.
Rodeo clown is the phrase he likes to use.
He does not always check his facts. You know, what he says may not be taken as the gospel truth because it may not all, you know, quite... But he said this on tape. How can you believe somebody that's come out and now is trying to portray all this stuff?
Yeah, but see, that's that beautiful, Elaine, that's that beautiful paradox, the one that begins, "Everything I tell you is a lie." If you follow
right.
that logically, it becomes a paradox. But I'm not going to try. You understand what I'm saying?
No, and so, I understand.
And so that's
saying.
What he's done.
Yeah.
You start out by saying, "Everything I tell you is a lie," but that must be a lie. That means sometimes he's telling the truth, but he can't be telling the truth because he said everything he tells you is a blah, blah,
exactly.
blah. And so at that point, the swirling black and white concentric circles are going around in the eyes of his viewers, and they're, "I will listen. That's great. You know, I'm Glenn Beck, and I just wanted to tell you that I love America. And did you know Van Jones is a communist?" Yes,
oh,
Van Jones is a communist.
Again today. You know, he keeps saying that, he said today specifically, this is an exact quote, he said, "And Van Jones was never checked out by anybody. I heard you on a repeat of one of your shows saying that he had been, but I wanted to make absolutely sure in my own mind. I went and checked. He was vetted by the Senate." What is that say? What is this guy?
No, but see, Glenn Beck is smarter. Glenn Beck is smarter than the Senate. But it's all sour grapes because what Glenn Beck won't say is that the group that Van Jones founded has taken money out of Glenn Beck's pocket.
Well,
because of the boycotts and
flabbergasted that the White House will not come on his show to. And that's what he's used for all of today. He said, "I've
oh yes, he's shocked,
week offering
shocked.
The White House to come on to repudiate, to, you know, to give me the answer to this list of questions that I have." Another comment that he made today. Well, that's how he started the show out today. Basically, was saying that he's still waiting for a phone call, a guest show, an email, anything from a senator, representative, the White House, somebody to respond to him and answer his questions. It's like nobody's going to answer them because everybody thinks you're a loon. But anyway, that doesn't register. And then he went on, the most intelligent thing he said in that 1 hour, "Sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me." And yes, he not only said that once, he said it 5 or 6 times, and his psychiatrist, Dr. Keith, totally agreed with him. And that people just don't realize what an honest, upstanding, wonderful man he is.
Honest, also, upstanding, wonderful ex-junkie he is.
Oh, well, he admitted that. And he said that it will be alcoholics like him that save the world.
Then the world is in big, big trouble. Hey, Elaine, I've got to run on, dear, but it's been a wonderful conversation. And good luck packing the bags. And I hope you get to see the Skype video.
Thanks, I will. I'll be in touch.
All right, do please. We'll talk soon.
Bye.
Bye now. I do have some Glenn Beck stuff, but we'll take a little break first. We'll just do it when we get there. So, listen, light up the phones if you want to. This is your last chance until Sunday night when All Foxed Up with John Fox comes along. We've got a great weekend schedule ahead for you. Billy Shears Night Sounds, Rick Goodner, Dr. Rick's Place is coming your way Saturday. Before that, Rick Smith from Pennsylvania, he'll have a fresh brand new show for you as well Saturday and Sunday. And then, like I said, All Foxed Up with John Fox Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. That's all on its way. We got one more hour of conversation available to you on its way as well. If you want to join in, you know the number, 877-443-2366. That's 877, the numeral 4, head on. And, of course, direct dial to 304-658-3333. Email to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, Activistcast@gmail.com. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is Activist Radio. This is The Horn.
Sisters and I have one wish before we die, and it may sound strange, as if our minds are deranged. Please don't ask us why. Beneath the sheltering sky, we have this strange obsession. You have the means in your possession. See in the Sahara with you. Danced for his pleasure with a joy you could not measure. They'd wait for him here, the same place every year, beneath the sheltering sky. Across the desert he would fly. She in the Sahara with
tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Got a compliment from News Ninja Gene on the selection of that last musical interlude. I love that song, too. And I'm going to do something here. I don't know if it's successful, but we're going to try something here. I'm going to stream some video. This is live from the memorial for Senator Kennedy at the John F. Kennedy Library in Boston. I got some luck. I go to stream this for you, and who do I get? Who do I get running his mouth? Bomber John McCain. Well, let's see. Let's see what this hypocrite has to say.
Passionate for the work. I know I'm privileged to serve there, but I think most of my colleagues would agree the place won't be the same without him.
Well, lucky us, we came in at the tail end of it, and there was nothing particularly offensive in that. Let's see what comes next.
Next, you'll have the joy and the privilege of viewing a video tribute to Senator Kennedy, directed by Ken Burns and Mark Herzog. You've heard other people speaking tonight. Tonight, you'll hear about the life of Ted Kennedy in his own words.
The sea, for me, has always been a metaphor of life. I mean, the sea is a constantly evolving, changing, shifting aspect of both nature and of life. That sort of exposure to the sea is both enriching and enhancing, and it's fun.
The sea, the wind, the outdoors, it is the most renewing, healing place for him, and always has been.
Oh, okay, that's a good job.
Yeah?
Sweat it a little bit.
He loves getting out and sailing. I think he's never more at peace and perhaps in some ways never more in touch with his family and his roots and his brothers than when he's out there sailing.
I grew up in a family that wanted to achieve in the sense of making a difference in people's lives.
I know that Ted Kennedy has always been unbelievably sensitive to the accomplishments of his brothers. They were his inspiration.
He has a legacy. He's done his very best to pick up where his two brothers left off.
Like my three brothers before me, I pick up a fallen standard, sustained by their memory of our priceless years together. I shall try to carry forward that special commitment to justice, to excellence, to courage that distinguished their lives.
He championed the cause of those who have been left out, the poor, the elderly, our children, those without education.
Was brought up to believe that, you know, to those to whom much is given, much is required. But it's really bigger than that. He really feels a moral obligation to do everything possible to make this world a better place.
I've heard Senator Kennedy say on many occasions that health care is not a privilege. It is a right.
As long as I have a voice in the United States Senate, it's going to be for that democratic platform plank that provides decent quality health care, low south, east and west, for all Americans, as a matter of right and not a privilege.
Because of Ted Kennedy, people have things today, they're able to do things today, they're able to reach for the American dream in ways that they never imagined.
I first met the senator at something called Children's Congress through the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation. And he asked me to come to testify in front of Congress about stem cell research and the support for that. If I could help someone almost as much as Senator Kennedy's helped me, then I'd be a very happy person.
City Year has given the opportunity for the best of our young people to serve in the community.
He deeply believes that national service ought to be part of the everyday life of every single American.
He committed right away to introduce new legislation to take programs like City Year to scale, to make it possible for young people all over our country to serve our country.
He deeply believes in service. Even as a United States Senator, he's read every Tuesday at a local school in Washington, D.C. as part of an Everybody Wins program.
We were signing up for this reading program, and I was assigned to read with Senator Kennedy as my reading partner. It gave me someone to want to do well for and make proud. I'm going to Virginia Commonwealth University in Richmond, and I'll be majoring in education.
We're talking about a man of incredible sensitivity. He has always been there for the troops. He's always been there understanding the sacrifices that those troops made. He's been there for their families.
We met Senator Kennedy for the first time in November 2003 when we buried our son John at Arlington National Cemetery.
Their son was lost because his Humvee was not up armored, and they've really dedicated their lives to making sure that other young men and women don't suffer the same fate.
John died just after his 20th birthday. Senator Kennedy agreed to call hearings. Within 6 months of those hearings, all troops in Iraq had body armor. And to that, I owe the senator.
Brian and his wife, Alma, turned that enormous personal tragedy into a remarkable force for change.
Senator Kennedy had been a Gold Star family before I was born. He remembers where his mother was, where his father was, when they came to tell him his brother Joseph was killed. We share a wound that doesn't heal, and a deep and abiding love for this country. And Senator Kennedy taught me that government can function for the common man.
His patriotism, his family, his faith, really, those three things are just intrinsic to who he is. You know, I think of him as this guy who's got really, really big shoulders, and he's strong for all of us, and he's funny, and he sort of leads the way. He's the Pied Piper in our family.
Well, let's count them. What do we call the one that way, way, way up at the tippy tip?
Oh, that? The halyard?
Oh, no, the fisherman?
Fisherman!
Don't tell me you want to put the fisherman on the other side now, Dad.
In the year I was born, President Kennedy let out word that the torch had been passed to a new generation of Americans. He was right, it had. It was passed to his youngest brother. From the battles of the 1960s to the battles of today, he has carried that torch, lighting the way for all who share his American ideas.
I see the day when President Barack Obama and Ted Kennedy will be moving progressive legislation through the Congress to help some of the most vulnerable people in our society.
We'll break the old gridlock and finally make health care what it should be in America, a fundamental right for all, not just an expensive privilege for the few.
The people in this country are going to respond in a hopeful and positive way. It's going to be a very, very dramatic and important alteration and change, and it's one that I'm looking forward to being part of.
We're all set now.
What a treat. I now have the privilege of welcoming a friend and colleague of Senator Kennedy's, and now the senior senator of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, John Kerry.
And Teddy, Kiki, Cara, Patrick, Corinne, Caroline, thank you for the privilege of sharing some words here today about my friend and my colleague of a quarter of a century. From the moment of fateful diagnosis 14 months ago until he left us, we saw grace and courage, dignity and humility, joy and laughter, and so much love and gratitude lived out on a daily basis that our cup does run over. How devastating the prognosis was as Ted left MGH with his family, waving to all, June a year ago. And that he lived the next 14 months in the way that he did, optimistic, full of hope, striving and accomplishing still. That he did that is in part a miracle, yes, but it's equally a triumph of the love and the care that Vicky, their children, and all who cherished him gave him in such abundance. In many ways, I think it's fair to say that this time, these last months, were a gift to all of us. The last months of his life were in many ways the sweetest of seasons because he saw how much we love him, how much we respect him, and how unbelievably grateful we are for his stunning years of service and friendship. And what a year he had, my friends. He accomplished more in that span of time than many senators do in a lifetime. Mental health parity, the Tobacco Act, a health care bill out of his committee. He spoke at the Democratic Convention. He wrote his memoirs. And he was there for the signing of the Edward M. Kennedy Service America Act and received the Medal of Freedom from the President and a knighthood from the Queen of England. I think many of you who were there would agree with me that perhaps one of the most poignant moments of all was when he was awarded an honorary degree from Harvard. His staff, through the years, was gathered in the front, and friends and family and admirers were scattered throughout the audience and filled the room, and Vice President-elect Biden was there. And you had no idea how hard Ted practiced and worked to be able to do that in the convention and his appearance at the White House, to make a speech that lived up to his high standards. He took the stage at Harvard, and for a few moments we all worried that it would be difficult to pull off. And then, before you know it, his voice began to soar, and the pace picked up, and he inspired again with a stunning restatement of his purpose in public life. When it was over, the applause never wanted to end. He stayed on the stage, reaching out to us, and we to him, and we wanted him to stay there forever. I first met Ted Kennedy when I was 18 years old as a volunteer for his first Senate campaign in the summer before I went to college. Then I met him again when I returned from Vietnam and we veterans encamped on the Mall in Washington. It was Ted Kennedy who had the courage to come down to the Mall one night and in a tent listen to us talk about Vietnam. We were controversial, but Ted broke the barriers, and other senators followed. He worked his heart out for me in the presidential race of 2004, and he made the difference in Iowa. When we were down in the polls and I was slugging it out there, Ted brought his humor, his energy, and his eloquence to Davenport to help melt the snows of that state. There we were just 2 weeks before the caucuses, and his voice boomed out in this room, "You voted for my brother! You voted for my other brother. You didn't vote for me." And as the crowd roared with laughter, Ted bellowed, "But we're back here for John Kerry, and if you vote for John Kerry, I'll forgive you. You can have 3 out of 4, he said. "And I'll love you, and I'll love Iowa." And let me tell you, Iowa loved him. We had a lot of fun there. He would open an event, and he'd come out, and he'd say, "I want to talk to you about a bold, handsome, intelligent leader, a man who should not only be president, but who should end up on Mount Rushmore. But enough about me. Now I'll talk about John Kerry." After that agonizing Tuesday night in November when we fell so short in one state, there were Ted and Vicky on a Wednesday morning, sitting with Therese and me in the kitchen in Boston, as we prepared to concede. He was always there when you needed him. And so were Sonny and Splash, incidentally, when you didn't. Once, when we were at a Senate retreat, Ted had just spoken, and then Joe Biden got up to make a point and rejoined her. And as Joe got more forceful in his argument, he started to gesture, and he took a step towards Ted. Boom! Sonny and Splash were up on their feet, barking wildly, defending Kennedy territory with a vengeance. And ladies and gentlemen, for the first time in history, we witnessed a Biden rhetorical retreat. And I have to tell you, one of my really favorite moments was Ted campaigning with my daughter Vanessa, who was here, campaigning in New Mexico. They were visiting an Indian reservation, and the tribal medicine man wanted to bestow a blessing. He took a feather, and he chanted, and he asked that Ted and Vanessa stand side by side and extend their hands and bow their heads. And with a sacred feather, he touched their feet, and he touched their foreheads, and he touched their hands, all the while chanting away. And when he finished, Ted leaned over to Vanessa and whispered, "I think we just got married." Well, you can imagine. Now, a couple of months later, she got a note from Teddy which said, "No matter what happens, we will always have New Mexico." One of the framed notes in Ted's Senate office was a thank you from a colleague for a gift, a special edition of Profiles in Courage. This is what it said. "I brought it home and reread it. What an inspiration. Thank you, my friend, for your many courtesies. If the world only knew." It was signed by Trent Lott, the Republican leader of the Senate. Indeed, if everyone only knew. When George Wallace was wounded in an assassination attempt, the first to visit him was Ted Kennedy. When Joe Biden underwent brain surgery for an aneurysm, the first to board the train to Wilmington was Ted Kennedy. When Jesse Helms announced that he had to undergo heart valve surgery, Helms told his constituents back in North Carolina, "It's no piece of cake, but it sure beats listening to Ted Kennedy on the Senate floor." So Ted wrote a note to Jesse saying, "I'd be happy to send you tapes of my recent Senate speeches if that will help your speedy recovery." And just 2 weeks ago, when I was in the hospital after hip surgery, just like Chris Dodd, there was Ted Kennedy on the phone asking how I was doing with all that he was dealing with. In his life, as we all know, Ted knew the dark night of loss. And I think that's why his empathy was global and deeply personal. After my father died of cancer just days before the convention in 2000, there was a knock at the door, completely unexpected, and standing there on the front porch was Ted Kennedy, dropping by to hug and talk and just to pass time with us. For 25 years, I was privileged to work by his side, learning from the master. And over the years, I've received hundreds of handwritten notes from Ted, some funny, some touching, a few correcting me, all of them special treasures now. He thanked me for my gift of a Catholic study Bible, commenting, "My mother would be very grateful to you for keeping me in line." He thanked me for a particularly challenging charter lift home after 9/11, when it was hard to get anything in the air. And he wrote, "Here's a riddle for you. What do you get when you make 3 calls to the FAA, 2 calls to the Secretary of Transportation, and 3 calls to Signature Flight Support? You get a great trip to Boston." His way of saying thank you. And he thanked Teresa and me for the gift of a vintage bottle, concluding, "I just hope that I've aged as well as this wine." The personal touch Ted brought to life extended, we know, well beyond the Senate colleagues. It reflected the kind of man that he was, and the kind of laws that he wrote. For 1,000 days in the White House, as Chris Dodd mentioned, President Kennedy inspired. For 80 days on the presidential campaign trail, Robert Kennedy gave us reason to believe and hope again. And for more than 17,000 days as a United States Senator, Ted Kennedy changed the course of history as few others have. Without him, there might still be a military draft. The war in Vietnam might have lasted longer. There might have been delays in granting the Voting Rights Act or in passing Medicare or Medicaid. Soviet Jewish refuseniks might have been ignored. And who would have been there to help them, as Ted did? Without him, we might not have stood up against apartheid as forcefully as we did. And the barriers to fair immigration might still be higher today, if everyone only knew. Without Ted, 18-year-olds might not be able to vote. There might not be a Martin Luther King Day, Meals on Wheels, student loans, increases in the minimum wage, equal funding for women's college sports, health insurance, the Family Medical Leave Act, the Americans with Disabilities Act, workplace safety, AmeriCorps, children's health insurance. If everyone only knew. He stood against judges who would turn back the clock on constitutional rights. He stood against the war in Iraq, his proudest vote. And for nearly four decades and all through his final days, he labored with all of his might to make health care a right for all Americans, and we will do that in his honor. In these last months, every visit Ted made to the Senate elicited an unstoppable outpouring of affection. Tears welled up in the eyes of Republicans and Democrats. Everyone missed his skills, his booming call to arms and conscience. On his last visit, Chris Dodd and I sat in the back row beside his desk and listened to Teddy regale us with an imitation of his efforts to practice throwing out a ball for the Red Sox opening game. He laughed and he poked fun at how reluctant his hand and muscles were to obey his commands. I was in awe of this moment of humility and self-deprecating humor in the face of genuine frustration. And as he so often said over the years, we have to take issues seriously, but never take ourselves too seriously. He was a master of that, too, and one of the great lessons that he taught me. In the end, his abiding gift was his incomparable love of life and his commitment to make better the life of the world. In between his time changing the world, he found time to capture it in marvelous paintings. He was a talented, gifted artist, and as we know, an incurable romantic. Who else would have thought to hide their engagement ring on a coral reef in St. Croix as they were swimming and diving so Vicky could find it? It never occurred to him that the waters might wash the ring away. But one thing's certain, their love endured from then until now, and it will endure forever. Massachusetts has always had its own glorious love affair with the sea. Like his brothers before him, salt water was in his veins. Teddy lived by the sea, and he lived joyously on it. The evening he passed away, I looked out at the ocean where gray sky met gray water. No horizon, the sky almost seemed to be in mourning. It was not a time for sailing. But the next afternoon, as I sat at his home, I looked out at a perfect Nantucket Sound, and I thought to myself with certainty, he's on a schooner now. He's sailing. Jack, Joe, Bobby on the foredeck, Rosemary, Eunice, Kathleen, Pat, trading stories with their parents, and Teddy at the helm, steering his steady course. Sail on, my friend. Sail on.
next speaker is one you've seen Senator Kennedy's name and then the name of his colleagues. Another great American who sat across the aisle and served our country well in the United States Senate. Please welcome Senator Orrin Hatch.
Oh, dear.
This is a tremendous honor to be in this wonderful city and this state where our revolution was begun. I'm just so grateful to be here. Vicky, Teddy.
You know, it occurs to me if they ever make a movie of Orrin Hatch's life, Christopher Walken should play him.
Ethel and Jane and all the rest of the Kennedy family. It's a great honor for me to be here with you today to talk about a man I have so much regard for, so much reverence for, with whom I've done battle for 33 years.
Then pass help.
And I've enjoyed every minute of it. You're like two fighting brothers, to be honest with you. There are a lot of things I could say about Ted Kennedy's career, but what I'd like to do is just take a few minutes to talk about Ted Kennedy, the man, and Ted Kennedy, my friend. By the time I came to the Senate in 1977, Teddy was already a giant among senators. As a Republican coming from Utah, I stated numerous times on the campaign trail that I planned to come to Washington to fight Ted Kennedy. In fact, I used to say that Kennedy's name was my very best fundraiser in the country. When I came to Washington, I hadn't the slightest idea that I would eventually have a strong working relationship with and love for the man that I came to fight. And if you would have told me that he would become one of my closest friends in the world, I probably would have suggested that you need professional help. But that's exactly what happened. People have called Tenney and me the odd couple, which was certainly true. There are few men with whom I have had less in common. Ted was born in a famous, well-to-do family of Boston. He attended private schools and Harvard University, was politically liberal, and liberal in his lifestyle, at least until he married Vicky, who set him straight, by the way. I grew up poor in a working-class family in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I attended public school. And the Harvard of Utah, BYU, that should get a bigger laugh than that. I was laughing at it, I'll tell you that. Great school, however. While Ted often played the role of the affable Irishman, I was the teetotaling Mormon bishop, and he was so proud one day to discover that I'm also Scotch-Irish. Yet despite our differences, we were able to work out a lot of things together. And that was due in large part to Teddy's willingness to recognize and work with those who shared his goals, even if they had different ideas on how to reach those goals. One of the defining moments as a senator came when I met two families from Provo, Utah. The parents in these families were humble and hardworking. They were prudent. They were frugal. And they were able to provide food and shelter for their children, but the one necessity they couldn't afford was health insurance. This is what inspired me to begin my work with Ted in creating the S-CHIP program, which continues to provide health care for and coverage for millions of children throughout the world.
Okay, this may be tacky on my part, but I'm just going to cut off there before I wind up losing my temper. Because I have no stomach for hearing an obstructionist Republican talk about health care and working with Senator Kennedy, when in fact Orrin Hatch has done everything in his power to make sure that Senator Kennedy's dream of making sure that every American, child, young, old, black, white, Asian, Native American, you name it. Every American, man, woman, every American has access to health care. Orrin Hatch has been such a part of making that not happen. And I don't want to sit here and just go into just unmitigated nasty. I don't want to do it. I don't. If out of nothing more than simple respect for Senator Kennedy himself. So we'll go away from that. We've got a line blinking here. Let's see who we've got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
I heard some things about Kennedy that I hadn't heard before about him, the things that he's done, and some of the things that touched me very much was that, and maybe you said it on the show, I didn't hear the first part of your show, but was that all of the fallen soldiers from Massachusetts, he went to their funerals.
Yes.
And also all the people that were from Massachusetts in 9/11, he was in constant contact with them, even up close to his day of death, you know. And he didn't just contact people. He put his money and his efforts behind whatever. And I know that, I think it was you that said about his son saying that people would come up and thank him for what his dad had done for him. And he said, what, you know, because his daddy didn't brag about it. And I think about in the Bible, you know, Jesus said that if you do it before men, you know, that's your reward. But if you do it secretly, then your Heavenly Father will reward you. And I think about a lot of the things that he did was really very biblical, very Jesus-like. And one thing I discovered when I was working in insurance, this is not about him, it's about Bobby. And I don't think very many people knew about it. I know people that I've talked to didn't. And that, you know, Bobby worked with the migrants a lot. And one time this people came in and they were migrants and they were probe workers. And they had, most of the time, those people don't have insurance. But you know what they had? They had the Robert Kennedy insurance for migrant workers and for field workers. And I don't know how expansive it was because, you know, everything gets cut off. And then the Republicans like to say, oh, well, you know, these programs just don't work. Well, they don't work because they fight against them after we do get them.
After we get them, they work ceaselessly at trying to kill it.
Right. And they do wound them greatly. I mean, they've wounded Medicare since I know about 1980. They've wounded it. And they will kill it off. People don't realize they will kill it off. But, you know.
But they're sharp enough, Juanita, that they won't kill it off outright. They will starve it to death.
And then claim that another
government program has failed.
They don't want to be blamed for it because they know they'll lose votes. But anyway, I just think about different things that he did. Those kind of things just mean a lot to me. And like he would pay people's hospital bills. If something would go wrong, you know, like if they had cancer, he would find them the best doctor and he'd call and say, you've got opportunity to go to this doctor, you know, he's the best and blah, blah, you know. I don't mean blah, blah that way.
But, no, I understand.
You know, this was just a magnificent family. I think a lot due to his mother. And I don't think we know what all these people have done at all in a beneficial way. And I think about that, how the Republicans now are saying that, oh, well, it's going to be another Wellstone. You know, they just did not like that memorial for Wellstone. And I remember when it first started, and I thought, wow, I love this. I thought it was such a great memorial. And they just, they're so jealous. That's the only thing I could figure. They're just jealous. It doesn't matter if they're in power. They're jealous. It's like, I always remember that Bill Maher said there were poor losers and there are poor winners. They're just never satisfied. And another thing about, you're talking about Glenn Beck. I saw that chalkboard thing he's got, you know,
yeah.
Van Jones, the communist and all like that. And then you hear other common people at these meetings repeating, oh, there's all these communists in his government, blah, blah, you know. And I noticed something about Glenn Beck and something that I couldn't stand about who was Bush's first attorney general?
Oh, Crisco John Ashcroft?
If you listen to their voices, they've got that hissing sound. They sound like
talking snakes.
Well, snakes, but they sound like hissing, like the snake in the Bible. You know, it's to me like they just sound hissing. Both of them. Have you ever noticed that?
I know what you're talking about. Yes.
And I guess Ashcroft used his a little bit intelligently, but that Beck, what a horrific person. What, he's a pathetic soul. And I thought about how they say, you know, that we hate Bush and this and that. You know, I came close to hating him, but you know, I had a lot of pity for that man. And I have a pity for them, they don't know what they're missing out on. And I'm just thankful that we did have Teddy Kennedy in our life and that we were able to see a Kennedy just going about and doing his thing, which was a wonderful thing.
Well,
many people do it.
Get this one, Edith. Check this out. I just went over and checked CNN just to get an idea of the coverage of the memorial service. They have a headline up. It's the lead headline. At least it's not something about Michael Jackson. Ted Kennedy's family friends celebrate his life. Guess whose picture is there?
God, I don't know.
John McCain.
Yeah, sure. Well,
I mean, it's mind-boggling to me. They will even in these circumstances, for-profit media will try to create will try to create a PR opportunity for some godless, soulless, motherless Republican.
Yeah, I'm not watching too much of that stuff. It's just hazardous to my health, I'll tell you.
Well, I can sure understand
all
that.
All lies and lies. But one thing I remember that about Kennedy was in the Senate when they were having hearings. I used to listen to the hearings, you know, when they called in the Secretary of Defense, you know, Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz and all. And I remember Kennedy said to Rumsfeld, said, don't you think you should be retiring?
Yeah, isn't it about time you resigned?
Yeah. And, of course, Doolittle, you know, said, well, not until the president says. But I love the way he could just cut to the chase, you know?
Yeah.
That was, I guess that's my point. But this man, you know, he did things in secret, and his heavenly Father reward him openly. And if you don't, well, I'm not going to be too happy with him.
Well, Juanita, thank you so much for your thoughts. I really do appreciate
Bob,
it. Have a good.
How was the game?
You said you didn't catch the front end of the program. Ferg got his elbow broken.
Oh no.
Yeah. you know. And so he's a very upset young football player right now.
Yeah.
But now we're learning the healing and rehab part of football. So
yeah, right. Now tell him he's one of the guys.
Exactly. So
we'll
deal with it.
Okay, Bob, and thank you for the opportunity to call in.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, Juanita. We love y'all too. You take care. Bye now.
Bye night.
And rolling along in these last few minutes of the program. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Sandra, what's up?
Oh, you know, listen, it's all been so disingenuous. I've been just sort of, you know, it's just, I stayed away from the coverage, and I caught some of the stuff in Boston. I don't know. It's just, some of these people need to shut their traps, you know?
Well, you know, Orrin Hatch, you know.
And yet,
you know why he's there. He's there because of the Kennedy family wanting to seem decent about things.
Well, it's unfortunate that, I mean, I know he was going to go. I wasn't, you know, who was shocked? No one. But he's really the last of the type who give a F, who's in position of power, you know?
Yeah.
And whatever flaws he had were just minuscule compared to these creatures who are here, you know?
I do.
I mean, the people who are still in power, I mean, they don't have a care for the people, nothing near like Kennedy. I don't know who can follow in his footsteps. I mean, some people mentioned Dennis, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's hard not to mention Dennis in those circumstances, but Dennis will never be in the Senate. I mean, that's just fact. So, but in spirit, yeah, and from opposite ends of the privilege spectrum. But in the Senate, I don't know who that guy or woman is.
Well, and the running commentary about, oh, we're going to pass this health care bill in his name is like sacrilege, because I don't know what bill they're going to pass, but they shouldn't associate.
Well, if they pass some bill that compels people to further enrich the for-profit the health insurance companies that are getting rich off of people being sick and hang Kennedy's name on it, I would not blame Ted Kennedy one iota for getting up and finding somebody.
Well, no, because it's just, I mean, I hear that, you know, I understand that Democrats are going to try to link some semblance of a health care reform to Kennedy now, especially, you know, now that he's gone. But if it's what they're working on, there's no way that they should, I don't know, it's not the legacy he would want, there's no way.
No, he wanted universal single-payer health care. And anything short of that is a betrayal. At least in my book, and I mean, do you read it that way?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, the timing, yeah. No, who could tell when the man was going to pass on? It just that the whole healthcare debate just seems in so much disarray. I hear people trying to harness it, and all of it just sounds really weak. And the Republicans, you know, they may have voted because of the power of Kennedy for, like, the chip, best chip bill. But he's not there anymore, so I just see it even getting more fractionalized.
I think you're right. And I think what we will see is a... And it's like these Republicans showing up for the memorial. It's a manifest orgy of right-wing hypocrisy. And they're not gonna suddenly wake up and realize that Ted Kennedy was right about health care, and that it's the decent thing to do, and that, yes, they, too, are going to shuffle off this mortal coil, and, yes, they, too, would like to have memorials as warm and heartfelt as his. No, none of that's going to happen because, you know, look, Ted Kennedy has passed on, and it's damn tragic. But the fact of the matter is, Sandra, the health insurance lobby is going to keep writing checks.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, it's not going to, I mean, he, you know, at the end of the day, like you said, he's one man, he's now gone, and they're just going to keep moving along. They may pull some of their disgusting ads that attacked him personally, but they'll just gear up in some other fashion. The only other thing that I wanted to mention was that one speech you played when he said, we don't want to hear from them for the next century. That's just reverberating in my head, you know?
Isn't that a beautiful thing?
That's just like unbelievable. I didn't realize that he actually said that. He said he did not want to hear from them ever,
yeah,
basically.
Right.
And, it, you know, it was just, I don't know, something about that speech just made me smile, and I thought, you know what? That's wonderful, you know, and I didn't realize he attacked them like that. I didn't know. That's priceless.
Oh, he wasn't afraid to give them down the road, and nobody had the starch to stand up against him, because one of the other things that goes with Senator Kennedy's passing, Sandra, is oratory. Oratory is a lost or nearly lost art in this country. And I mean, you know, tune in C-SPAN 2 any day of the week and listen to some mush-mouth, mumble-face the babbling on or reading dully from the script that his legislative assistant has prepared for him. And understand that something, greatness, the very essence of greatness is gone from the Senate.
Oh, no, the Senate is just a hollow. I don't know. I mean, it sort of reminds me of just what I've read about the Roman Senate as it was sort of picked apart. You know what I mean? Just,
yeah, long about the time when Caligula introduced his horse,
right,
Incitatus, as a senator. Right.
Yeah, it just was sort of just annihilated. And it's the same thing now. And I also flash back to the civil rights period, where even on the evil side, you had inspired speeches. You have nothing now, you know?
Exactly.
I mean, remember Homeboy who said there's some consuming going on here? Is that Ernest Holland? You don't even have that anymore.
No, it's not. Something, you know, something great. maybe it's because we're not teaching it in the schools. We're running out of time, but something to mention in this context, Sandra. Today was the last episode, and this may seem really out there, but today was the last episode of PBS's Reading Rainbow.
Oh, with LeVar Burton?
Yeah.
Shut up. I thought that would... Why is that going off the air?
Well, the funding dried up, and because of what the Bush administration did to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, there was no more CPB money to be had for Reading Rainbow.
Yeah, God, that's
and it's just another example of the stuff we don't teach anymore. Because, you know, that wasn't about teaching children to read. That was about teaching children to love to read.
Yeah. Oh, God. Well, as that goes off, you have the rise of Twitter, you know, which is like something straight out of Orwell, as far as I'm concerned. But, yeah, I'll let you go. It's been a bit of a depressing week, so.
It's been a tough one. It really has been.
I have to say. But anyway, I hope you have a good weekend.
Thank you, Sandra. You too.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye now. From California, that's Sandra, and I always enjoy her calls and look forward to them. Yeah, they cut off Reading Rainbow. And there's a certain irony to the fact that they canceled Reading Rainbow in the same week that Senator Jim Inhofe, whom Bart Kopp refers to as Pissquick, declared that he had no intention of reading any health care bill, that he was just going to vote against it. I guess they needed to cancel Reading Rainbow because its message of teaching people how to love to read was clearly lost, especially if you use Senator Inhofe as your yardstick. So that's the program for tonight. We are slap out of time. Thanks to Peter Godbold. Keep getting well, our brother. Thanks to John Fox, to Ben Birch. Thanks to all the moderators in the chat room and on the Horn website. Thanks to our news ninjas and our blogger. Thanks to everyone who makes the Horn continue to happen. That PayPal button is there at headonradionetwork.com, and it sure would be nice if it got a little bit of a workout here as August ends. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks from Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Cussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Well, here it is, the last Friday in August. School is in session here in the hills and hollers of West Virginia. We're trying to get the little Kincaid tribe back into the swing of things, back in sync, as it were. And, well, you know, I was gone from the microphone last night. I don't know how many of you already know this. It may have already gone out over the Coconut Telegraph, for all I know. But I was gone from the microphone last night because it was Ferg's first big scrimmage. It was the I don't know if other states do this, but like the all the schools in the county, or for the most part in the middle school arena, bring their squads together for one big inter-county scrimmage or some such, and they sort of have a round of scrimmaging, one school against another, and then another school, and then another. You get the idea. And so our little school scrimmaged first against arch rival Fayetteville, and then scrimmaged against Beckley Stratton Middle School from over in Raleigh County. That's how it was cruising along. Ferg was doing a good job. Saw him get several. He was in on several gang tackles and had a couple of solos that were real pretty. Shot video of it to show his mama, of course, and relatives and so forth. And then it happened. He was involved in a gang tackle, and somebody came just whammied the just really popped a lick on a couple of guys. And I'm sitting here next to Horn intern junior grade Ferg with a busted wing. A very frustrated Horn intern junior grade Ferg with what we have had initially diagnosed as a fracture in his elbow. And his arm all splinted up. And he is a most miserable fellow. So that has taken up most of last night and the best part of today. And he is intensely angry and frustrated. and afraid that his season is over. But it's part of the game, you know. It just is. And we've had talks about that, but it's kind of hard to explain that to a jacked-up 13-year-old who was really anxious to go out and start knocking heads. But it is the last Friday in August. Summer will soon be done. I guess with the start of the school year, you can pretty much argue that summer's over. Still some warm weather left. A little bit rainy today, but nice outside just the same. And with this being the last Friday in August, well, it's Friday. That means it's Friday on the front porch. That means it's up to you what happens in the program. Come on, but it's up to you every night. If there is a radio show on planet Earth that is caller-focused and listener-driven, I don't know what would be more so than this program. But Fridays we do kind of lighten up a little bit. You might recall last Friday we talked a little football, and I have a sneaking suspicion, with the time of year being what it is, we will talk a little more and more. So there you go. I mean, that's sort of where this Friday is headed. It's a grab bag. It's a mixed bag. It is a show with an uncertain, uncharted path. We're just going to go off on a little wander, if that's okay by you. And of course, you know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, or on your own nickel, 304-658-3333. August is ending, and it has been a financially brutal August. For those of you who haven't, or haven't lately, if you could be so kind as to hit the PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com, it would be really, really good to end on an up note for a variety of reasons. Obviously, the Pittsburgh thing was expensive. And you all helped out immensely. But, you know, the month-to-month bills, they don't take breaks because we're out there trying to build exposure for the Horn, which we did do, and which has resulted in some really, really good conversations and some good awareness building. But we do continue to have the regular monthly needs, and we are needing, believe me. So as August comes to an end, and of course we will have there are a couple more shows left in August, mind you, but let's try to please make this end on an up note before September begins, and then we zero out and start all over again. There's that. And something else, just a sort of a little reminder for you. If you have been a long-time listener to this program, you know that we live about 8 miles ahead of the curve. We truly do. And I just wanted to give you an example of it because it is it's an example that comes from someone whom I highly respect and whose opinion I know matters a great deal to most of you. And I would have talked about this on Wednesday evening, except for the fact that we devoted Wednesday evening to the passing of Senator Kennedy. And I didn't want to interject this then. But over at Crooks and Liars, posted on Wednesday by Logan Murphy, Wednesday, August 26th, 2009, at 2 p.m., according to the post,